and welcome to episode 83 of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. We've got three segments for you this week. Kicking things off, we have Don, Carmine, and Aaron talking about all the great upcoming 3DS games they got a chance to play, including A Link to the Past 2, Mario and Luigi Dream Team, and Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D. So that is very good stuff. After that, we have a news recap as well as some virtual console impressions with myself, Zach, Tyler, and Danny. And then after the outro, we have a bonus segment all about the first half of this season of Doctor Who. That's with myself, Patrick, and special guest Amanda Albert. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dan Koopman, and today with me, I have Carmine Red.
I got to play Zelda!
Yeah! I didn't know where to go with that one. And Aaron.
Hi, I played Zelda 2.
You played Zelda Link to the Past 2. Yeah, that's correct. You didn't play Zelda 2 recently, didn't you?
No, not for the past few months.
Good, good. I was a bit curious there.
Zelda 3, 2? I don't know.
I don't know. So, we've come here together to talk about the 3DS Showcase events, which were in Europe and America recently. I think you guys were directly after the Direct?
Yes.
Yeah. I had to wait for an additional week, so that was fun. For all things considered, for my European standards, that's actually pretty quick.
I think it sounds like you guys, you had to wait that additional week, but I think we had sort of had similar games to try out, Dan. You got to play Zelda too, right?
Yeah, I got play Zelda yesterday at time of recording, which was on Thursday. So I've spent like 3 or 4 hours into a Nintendo's Benelux office, which is where they do all operations for like Netherlands and Belgium. And they had this whole like room set up where they usually just gather to talk business, and we used that room to just play 3DS games.
Hmm. Yeah, it was a little bit different in the U.S. They actually rented out basically a floor in a hotel room in San Francisco, and then there was a room where they had all the games, and then they brought all the press. And there's a lot of the American press is located in San Francisco or around the area, so it makes it fairly convenient. And so that's where they went for that.
Yeah, and they actually, I think they also needed a slightly different venue because they had, right before they let us all in to play the games, they had a little, you know, bit of a presentation to talk about the eShop sales figures and stuff, and Bill Chinen was up there, introducing, some of the games we'd be playing later, you know, sort of prefacing things. So it was usually what they have in San Francisco is like single game, go down to the PR offices, but this was a bigger event.
I see. Usually it just goes mean to the office usually as well, but it never changes. It's always just go to their office.
Yeah.
Instead of, except for launch events, but that's a whole other story. They do weird stuff for launch events here. So what's the first game you kind of want to discuss? We brought up Zelda, so we should discuss Zelda first?
It's probably what people want to hear.
Possibly. So, in Japan, it's almost literally called, it's something along those lines, Link to the Past 2. But in Europe and America, it's just called a new Legend of Zelda game. But set in the world of A Link to the Past.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the title screen, it doesn't even say new. It just says The Legend of Zelda. You know, it's like
yeah,
a completely general thing. Have they, in Japan, have they specifically actually said Link to the Past 2, or is that just another, like, we could call it that here too, but Nintendo of America has not used that to describe it.
No, it hasn't, Europe hasn't done that either. It has been a weird thing where Japan has specifically named the game how it is, but it could be like an American thing where, like, it will have a different subtitle and Europe comes along for the ride this time.
Yeah, I mean, the original, I mean, Link to the Past wasn't called A Link to the Past in Japan anyway, you know, it's called Triforce of the Gods, so I imagine they wouldn't use that title in the U.S. anyway.
Yeah.
and they'd have to figure out some new way of, probably based on the new game mechanic, but maybe not.
To bring up the new game mechanic, that's the one with the, we're going into the walls, basically. So, that's, I haven't seen it enough, really, to give my full judgment on it yet. I've seen a taste of it and some puzzles that you kind of introduce yourself to the mechanic. But I'm kind of interested now in how they're going to expand on that one further.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, I think, so in the demo, going back a bit, it was one dungeon. So that there, none of the overworld, nothing, just one dungeon trying to show off basically that it has similarities to A Link to the Past, but also has this new like 2D to 3D mechanic. And I thought what they showed was pretty cool. But yeah, I do agree that I'm not sure where they will go with it. I think there are a lot of possibilities, but it remains to be seen what they'll do.
Personally, what I like the most of playing that Zelda demo is the pace to it. I like how more quickly fashioned it was, because personally, I'm not the biggest fan of the 3D Zeldas. I like them, but I have to really dedicate some time to it. It was also with the DS games, and I like having the type of experience we saw in that demo. I like to have that sort of stuff on a handheld. Like going through quickly through these 2D dungeons, quickly explore puzzles, and grab some secrets along the way.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
I don't know. It's hard to say based on this demo, because I sort of felt like this demo was so out of context that it might have been thrown together just for this. I don't know if it's actually some dungeon that they have in. It might turn out to be some dungeon they have in development and that they're tweaking, but I wouldn't be surprised to find out that this is just a test bed and nothing like this exists in the real game.
They have gone either way in the past, so it's hard to say really at this point in time.
Yeah, I do agree, like, the 2D Zelda sort of, you can put together like a more compact, intricate dungeon that sort of better uses, I guess, the abilities that Link has than some of the 3D games have, and also uses several different abilities and not just focuses on one primary thing the whole time. So that was really nice to see. In the demo, you had like the hammer and your sword and the bow.
Yep.
And then the wall 2D projection, whatever you want to call that. And you had to use almost everything.
Well, what did you need to use the bow for? I remember playing with it, but I don't think it was necessary, actually.
Yeah, I don't think that one was necessary.
Not really. I used it to shoot some enemies from a distance just to try it out, but I don't believe I used it for anything significant beyond that. The hammer mechanic I kind of had to use to. Because it has been a while since I used a mechanic like that. And so you have these springs where you go up to different layers, and that is actually a really interesting tweak to 3D. And going up that layer and then seeing a whole new depth to it. And that's something I really liked about it as well.
Yeah, I think it's ironic, but I came out there thinking that 2D Zelda is the best use of the 3DS's 3D, you know, visuals, because you can, just this demo, you can see down to the level below you, or the level below that, so it's somehow really compelling, even though the gameplay is back on a 2D plane.
Yeah you see that hole in the ground, you see that layer beneath it, it's like looking into, like, a box, and it's just a feel of depth to it, and that's what I can see myself really getting into that.
And I want to say that those sorts of puzzles were in Link to the Past, and those were my favorite parts of Link to the Past, where you're like a floor above, and you're like, wait a second, I think that I'm above this floor, and if I fall down here, I can get to the pot. I mean, I can get fall down this hole, which will fall down another hole, and then I'll land in the secret room with the fairies or something like that, you know? Or there's a puzzle in the ice temple, which I absolutely love, that uses the same sort of the same thinking process. And I think it's great to see that come back. So I think it's sort of really neat that actually it sort of really plays into the strengths of the hardware and what they want to do with this game and the theme of Link to the Past.
Yeah, I think to give an example from the demo, you had this one floor that had all these cracks in it, and it looks like you were just kind of stuck and there was nowhere to go, but you actually had to take your hammer and break the floor down to go back down to the previous room to be able to actually progress upward again. And there's just a lot of sort of up and down, left and right maneuvers. You know, like with the 2D Link, once you're projected onto the wall, you can't go up or down, so you have to sort of like pop out into 3D to move around and then go back into 2D. And so there was a lot of play with that too.
I think we just got a taste of it. I think it's not enough for a final judgment, but I'm very cautiously optimistic about the game.
Yeah, what do you guys think about the graphics?
I didn't know what to think of it when I saw the video, but I liked what I saw in motion.
Yeah, I think usually these kind of things look a lot better on the 3DS screen than they do.
Yeah.
Link in particular looked a little bit plasticky, but yeah, it does look a lot better on the 3DS than the screenshots that have been posted.
So let's move on, because this cannot be a Just a Zelda podcast, because we could talk about this demo forever. So to shift it completely and save the best stuff for last, let's go to Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D.
Oh, I'm scared of this game now. I never played it on the Wii, so I was like looking forward to play it on the 3DS, and I was just lost. I was dying left and right. Aaron can tell you. It's just sad. I just try to do something and I'd walk forward or slip forward and just fall to my death.
That feeling is not exclusive to the Nintendo 3DS version. Everybody listening.
Yeah, I think part of it, I don't know. Like, I think Carmen's experience is a combination of two things. One, yes, the game did have a lot of that originally, but also, I don't know. You'll have to tell me what you thought, but I thought that the controls are actually not an improvement. Despite the fact that they got rid of the motion control, it just felt a lot less precise, and the button mapping didn't make any sense.
I had to get used to the button mapping, especially like smashing the environment with Donkey Kong hands. But mostly for the rest, I got kind of used to it pretty quick. But maybe it's just a personal itch of something you didn't like. I'm more interested in hearing about that. What didn't you really like about it?
Well, I thought that the roll was sort of too easy to trigger. Now I guess that it was sort of tethered to the running, which is part of the game design, which they might have to actually alter levels to adapt to that. But then the other thing that didn't make any sense to me was why we would have to use shoulder buttons at all, particularly to pick up barrels and throw them, when there are two other face buttons that are completely unused except to clone the other two buttons.
Yeah, okay, this is maybe a very dumb move. I started playing Donkey Kong Country Returns again from the point where I last left off on Wii, which are the jungle levels. So I decided it was a good idea to go to the one with the many vines across that map. So I had to use that R button constantly to hold across vines and then press the B button to jump. At first I was like, this seems not very natural, but what I felt afterwards is that it didn't really cramp my hands as much because I had the freedom to push those buttons more simultaneously.
That's interesting. Yeah, I always have issues with hands cramping around the 3DS controller. So maybe
they did it because of that reason, but I'm not so sure about it yet. So, the game looks nice, I guess, on the 3DS.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's downrest a little bit, but it's mostly there.
Did you guys got to play around with like the Final World stuff?
Yeah, I played a few levels. Of course, I'm a fan of the minecart level, so I jumped right into that one. And that one was kind of interesting because you had some of the minecart riding portions, but then it split off, and then you had some just regular platforming, and then went back to the minecart. I played with that a bit. There wasn't anything really amazing about the levels I saw. They just seemed like more levels. I'm not really sure who designed them.
I guess Monster Games, yeah. But we never know for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a ton of play with them. They didn't wow me, but I don't know, they weren't bad.
Fair enough. I played also around a bit with, like, the new mode.
Mm-hmm.
I found the game a lot easier because of them. Because I chose a few of the items, and I make very dumb mistakes in, like, platforming games, where I trigger the wrong button, do a wrong action, and fall to my death. So, it was very handy for me to have that green balloon with me, because with it, I was finally able to finish a level. In one sitting. I don't know. I guess it's good for, like, the players who are intimidated, like, maybe perhaps for Carmine, it's good for you. I don't know how you feel about that.
I am very intimidated by this game now. I thought I'd jump in and it would be just like playing Donkey Kong Country on the Super NES, but it isn't, and now I'm completely going to be dependent on new mode, because I apparently suck at video games. Yeah. But the thing about new mode is it doesn't actually change any of the... I mean, it doesn't seem to me like they've done, like, this drastic attempts to make the game easier. They just give you more tries. They give you more health. They say, oh, you drop down. Here, we'll just bring you back up, you know, once or twice. Instead of just saying, oh, you fell, you died. So it's sort of like these tweaks on the periphery, on the edge of the gameplay to try to, like, you know, account for maybe falling down. But that won't help me unless I can actually learn how to, like, play the game. So I don't know. I think it might take some of the pain off, but I'm going to need to get used to this control scheme, and I'm going to have to get it out of my mind that this is a Donkey Kong Country game, because it isn't. It feels like a completely different beast. At least, maybe that's just my, you know, nostalgia talking, and my thinking that, oh yeah, Donkey Kong Country was a game that anyone could pick up and play.
It takes some adjustments, for sure. But when you get in the zone with it a bit, I'm sure it will all be good and fine, but maybe it's not the best version to play the game, but it seems like a fair representation of what was available in the Wii game.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am, I'm glad that it's going portable now, because, you know, like, I don't know, I guess I end up playing a lot more platformers on 3DS now than I do elsewhere.
It kind of came in the lull of, like, the start of the end cycle on Wii, like, in 2010, and it came out almost directly after, like, Kirby's Epic Yarn, I believe. So that wasn't directly well planned. So it feels like a better time slot for it, and all the power to that.
Yeah, there's a part of me that questions whether they, now that I've played it and seen how much of a challenge it can be, like, I have cousins who, like, really love the Donkey Kong Country series, and I'm not sure that an increase in difficulty is the right way to go for people who played this, like, who have a lot of history with the Donkey Kong Country platformers. But I you know, I'm way late to the boat on that, because I missed the Wii version, and this is years later that I'm saying, wait a second. But anyway, that's my two cents.
Fair enough. So what next? Mario versus Donkey Kong?
Mario versus Donkey Kong, or Mario and Donkey
Kong? Mario and Donkey Kong. Jesus, I have to forget that versus thing doesn't exist anymore. Because there has been, how many games has there been in that series? Like, this is the fifth one?
I keep thinking that it's a relatively young series, and then I remember that there's, like, GBA games in.
Right. Yeah, though they keep changing up the formula. Like, the first one was similar to the old Donkey Kong on Game Boy, and then they went to this Lemmings thing for, like, three iterations, and now they've got this new thing, which is, like, a Pipe Mania based game, which is very different.
So, what was your take on that, Aaron?
I thought it was interesting. There were a lot of different little sub modes. I thought it was actually sort of a lot more complicated than I expected at earlier levels. There's a lot of stuff to manage at once. So basically, you have to drag these tiles in. That form this path on this grid, and the minis walk along this path to the goal. And along the way, you've got to avoid all these different hazards. But even before that, you just have to construct the path in the right way that the mini can actually complete it and not fall to his doom. I mean, there's definitely some interesting ideas, but it does seem to be a little bit tricky.
Yeah, it seems, at the surface, it seems like a very easy game. But then you get into, like, a few later levels, and it's like, oh, okay, how do I solve this one exactly? And then also the various variations on the thing. So there was, the first one was Mario's Main Event, which are just, like a style of Tetris, or like any regular puzzle game, they will fall from the right, and you have to place them in an environment as quickly as possible. And then there was, what was the second one? Puzzle Palace.
Puzzle Palace, yeah.
In which you just get a set of blocks. And then the game is just figure it out. And there was Mini Mayhem. Which you just, that's are actually a very different concept, because you then don't have to place tiles. But you have to adjust corners where the minis can walk upon.
Yeah, that one was... I saw two different set types of levels in that mode. One was like a sliding puzzle game that you may have, like, the little plastic things you can get for like 50 cents or whatever. And then there were just ones where you had to actually rotate them, but they were already placed. And so, yeah, there were a lot of different interesting puzzles.
Did you guys try the giant jungle one?
Yeah, that one's... Well, there were only, what, like two or three of those levels made. Because I guess you really have to play the main game a lot to be able to complete them.
Yeah, you unlock them by collecting, like, tons of stars for them.
Ah, okay. Yeah, they had everything unlocked in our version, so...
In our version, actually... They didn't. Like, they had, like, 50 stars, and they had, like, a couple things unlocked. And you could see, like, the star amounts for some of the stuff. So you would see, like, 60 stars for this next mini-game, which we'll get a little bit into later. Or, like, 50 stars for this specific level. So you could kind of see where they were going with that and how the unlocking system would work in that fashion. Like, the main stuff is just pretty regular. You can choose from any of the three modes you want. But when you collect enough, like 50 of them, like the first giant jungle level will then pop up. Did you guys try to make, like a circular path on the playing field?
I mean, that's a good method for, like, queuing up things if you can't deal with them at the right time. Just get them walking around in a circle, and then... But the problem is, some of the levels have such a short time window to actually complete that, like, if you do that, you probably aren't going to be able to use it up.
Well, actually, you do earn some time by doing so, because I have to explain to people what happened. So, I made this circle because I was, like, I was all out of options, and I was trying that big jungle level. I was like, what should I do? I'm completely screwed over. Then I made a circle, ended up being, and then what happened is that then a bunch of clocks appeared, and I had to tick as fast as possible on the touchscreen to collect them. So that was a surprise tweak what I did with that. Um, so, So then there are the mini games. I think the first one was Mini Target Smash, which is just breaking like these objects, like these floating objects, and then score points. Which is like there's basically every shooting gallery ever.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was cool because it was actually in 3D. There was a little bit of strategy because some targets were worth more than others, and it took time to actually pull the slingshot back, so you had to strategize a little bit.
Yeah, I never actually got to try out the mini games. I was watching Aaron play it, but I felt like a lot of them were variations on that. I mean, there's Mini Target Smash, the Cube Crash one is slightly different. Is that what it's called? Cube Crash?
Yeah.
Cube Crash, yeah. That's the giant block.
Yeah, you're using the exact same mechanic, but instead of targets, it's this 3D cube, and you're breaking off sections, but it's slowly rotating, or it's quickly rotating. Yeah. So, and then the Shy Guy is sort of the same thing, though, isn't it? I mean, well, except for the reeling in.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, so basically, in this mini game, you have to grab Shy Guy off the air and reel them in like a fishing hook.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. It was a little bit frustrating, you know, just like, I don't know, I don't find spin your stylus around the screen type games very fun.
Except when they're Windan. Yes?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
But even then, that part of it probably was the least favorite of mine.
I liked the last one, Elevation Station, though.
Yeah, that was different.
It's still circling around the touchscreen, but it's more of a slower pace, and you have to like avoid and collect coins and avoid obstacles, I should say.
Yeah. I wonder if these were just like random little game concepts that NST had put together at some time, and now that they have a game to put out, they're like, hey, let's throw these in there, or if they actually, because they have nothing to do with the main game at all. But that's cool. I mean, I like playing with little mini-game concepts.
Yeah, and it's also your reward for going through those regular puzzles, so I think it's a nice change of pace for the whole experience as well. Before we go to Mario & Luigi Dream Team, are there other games you want to talk about? Animal Crossing?
Well, Animal Crossing, I mean, it's been out in Japan for a while. Animal Crossing was the first game I ran to.
Yeah, I mean, I played it for 90 hours, so I don't have to say about it very much. I mean, I talked about it twice on the Famicast. I mean, so do you guys have any thoughts on that game?
I don't. It's not my thing, so I'll give that all to Carmine.
Well, I want to ask. Maybe you've answered this before. What do fortune cookies or fortunes you buy with Street Pass coins?
Those you get Nintendo items with.
Oh, so you can get like a Nintendo set of furniture. That's the reward system there.
Yeah, so basically you get like this lucky card, which you have to trade in to the clerk. And this rewards a Nintendo costume bit or a Nintendo bit of furniture.
Okay, because I was looking at that, but I didn't have any street coins on my demo unit. You know, and I probably should have just like looked around and then started shaking the thing wildly, but I never got to figure that out. And I don't know if I was just wondering what that was like, because I sort of have conflicting feelings about the big month-end raffle in the GameCube version, and that was just a really stressful thing of will I win the NES game or not, and if I don't, then I'm going to reset and risk Mr. Rossetti's wrath. But I was curious to see how they handled it.
The fun part about Mr. Rossetti, he is not there from the start anymore.
So. When does he... Yeah, wait, I didn't see him, you're right, but...
I'll explain this. Mr. Rossetti is now... Pretty much, you have to unlock him. because you have these community projects in your town, right? One of them is the Mr. Rossetti Surveillance Center. So if you unlock that, then Mr. Rossetti will pop up.
And what happens if you try to, you know... mess with the game before you do that?
Isabella will tell you to not do that, but beyond that, she can't do much about it, really.
So it sounds like they made this game a little less striking for players who are getting into it. Because there are certain points in the Animal Crossing franchise that are like really stress points. It's like, oh, I have to work for Nook now, and oh, I'm in debt, and you know, and oh, I don't know this town or stuff like that. And it seems like there are little tweaks here that sort of get around those.
Yeah, the first interesting thing they've changed is that when you go now start up your town, you can now choose the layout of your town, and if you don't like it, you say, no, it's not my town's map, and you get a different town's map.
Yeah. I mean, it's limited to like three.
Like that.
Yeah. It's limited to like three, and then if you don't like those three that it randomly generates, then you have to reset. But it's nice things just to make it a little less severe getting into a game of Animal Crossing. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I've been...
90 hours, playing... you say?
Yeah. I said that to the rep of Nintendo, actually, that, why aren't you playing Animal Crossing? Seems like a game you like. And I said to her, I played this game for 90 hours. She said, what? And then I gave her my Japanese 3DS and sent her to my daily, what's it called? What was your time on the 3DS? I don't remember. Time counter, whatever. So I gave her to that. It's like, oh yeah, you're right. No. Incredible.
Oh yeah, the activity log.
Yeah, the activity log. So yeah, and she was kind of baffled by it. But I will do it again because I'm also expecting an American copy for Nintendo Force. And I will start all over again. So that will be terrible. The most dreadful experience of my life, or it will be the best experience of my life ever. I don't know. Playing it all through again, I do it barely. The last time I did it was with Fire Emblem. That worked actually well for me. But we'll see. Was there anything else at your guys' event beyond what we talked about before we go to the final game?
Well, they had The Chase Begins, LEGO City.
Yeah. I already finished that, and I'm not so very keen on that game, so that's all I have to say about that one.
Yeah, I think the game's already out, so it wasn't as high a priority for us. I sat down and started it up towards like the end, but the load time was significant. And then when I got in, I was like, oh, wow, cool. It looks a lot like the Wii U city, which apparently... I could be wrong, but it sounds like it's the exact same layout of the Wii LEGO City.
Yeah, only that the zones are now split up in various parts.
Yeah, okay.
And the loading times are worse if you go to different zones.
So yeah, and they also had Dylan's Rolling Western, The Last Ranger there, but I just written a review for that, so I didn't need to replay it. I just needed to push my own copy of the game to completion.
They had, for us, as an additional extra, they had Mystery Dungeon there, which is out in North America, which is coming out in May in Europe. And I was looking at that, somebody playing it, and I was like, nah, this is not for me.
Have you ever played any of the Mystery Dungeon games?
I played the American demo, because I also have an American 3DS, and I played a little bit of that, and I was like, this doesn't seem really much for me. And the guy who was playing it was further into the game than the demo ever got. But
it doesn't seem
like something.
I have to admit I played like the very first game in the series, and then I really just haven't picked it up since then.
Okay.
So
Mario and Luigi Dream Team.
Alpha Dream is back! It's so cool.
Did they ever went away?
It's just so nice to see that art style again, you know, the Mario and Luigi sprites.
Yeah, it's
art style seems better though this time. It looks so good.
Yeah, it's because, there are like sort of, it's like pseudo 3D, but they still have drawn the sprites, so it looks really nice.
It has an art book feel to it, and that feels me all tingly inside. Funny part, before I started playing the demo, so I was busy with Zelda, and No one was playing Mario & Luigi at the time. So I was hearing the title music in the background while I was playing. I was like, I need to play this game. I love this music already. Bring me to that demo now. So I went to that demo. I was just done with Zelda. I started it up and was like, this look... Okay, and so... I'm out of words already. So I started playing the demo, and the first thing I directly... It does just start you up middle of nowhere. You have no idea what was going on. And it kind of introduces you... the bit where you get into it kind of introduces you to the dream worlds and, like, the dreamy Luigi.
Yeah, I think the demo actually... There's a lot of exposition, too. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, there's a lot of exposition, but at the beginning, you're not sure what's going on. You're just heading into...
I think in the beginning, you fall off a bridge. I think that's, like, the very first thing I remember.
Yeah, you fall off a bridge and then land in the cave, and then...
Yeah, you start right off with, like, their sort of Mario and Luigi-type humor.
But, it was... it's interesting. It was one of the longer demos at the event. I mean, Zelda was great, and everybody rushed to it, but the Zelda dungeon, you know... once you beat it, a lot of people could cycle through it. And by the end of the event, you know, I think everyone had played that. But in order to play the full demo for Mario and Luigi, that was sort of epic.
Yeah, that was like 30-40 minute demo there.
Yeah, it took me 40 minutes to complete that one. So, intending the content of the demo, so you get introduced to these dream world sequences, which are these side-scrolling levels where Mario and a dreamy version of Luigi travel through Luigi's literal dreams. Or so we are told. Or something like that. It's more like... It's also the worlds that these creatures inhabit in, the pillow creatures.
Yeah, it's like there's this alternate dimension. I mean, it's kind of... I mean, you like tear like a hole and like... space-time or something, and, like, Mario can jump through into Luigi's dreams, and I don't know, it reminded me a lot of like, having the dual mechanic in Bowser's Inside Story. Where you had, like, something going on in, like, the outside world. In this case, Luigi's sleeping body. and then you've got, like, this internal world, which is dreams this time.
So, during normal gameplay, you have this... What did I call it? Luigi Works or something?
Oh, yeah. I had to actually write down notes for this demo just because they had so many random terms.
Let's call it the Luigi Dream Works for now. That makes it very simple for us. So you have, for example, Luigi's mustache. You have to grapple it on the touchscreen, and then Mario will fling up to higher platforms. There are platforms in the background or, like, objects, and Luigi has to blow them in the foreground by letting him sneeze by touching his nose.
Yeah, and when I was playing it, it's actually pretty easy to do. You know, you get to it, and then you can quickly hit L, which on the top screen activates Luigi's, like, jump into that object power, that thing in the background that will sneeze, or the face that will have the leaves that sort of resemble his mustache. And then I was just using my finger for the bottom screen. I don't know if... Is that what you guys ended up doing, too?
No, I just used the stylus.
Yeah. I thought... I think it was a really cool mechanic. I thought it was a little bit annoying to have to switch back and forth, especially if you, for instance, screw up and fling Mario the wrong way, or he falls down or something, then you have to convert Luigi back to his normal form, get back to where you were, then convert Luigi back to his Luigi Nation, I guess is the term they used.
Yeah.
And then try it again. And so that was a little bit annoying, but I like the idea.
Yeah. The 2D stuff seems a little simple, but they are just introducing us to these dream worlds. I kind of had the idea that it was very early on into the game. Because also, like, Mario and Luigi were in the demo, like, at level 4 or 5. So I had some feelings about this one. And then, as the demo went on, we started getting into the battles. Which just retains that that same classic feel as the other Mario & Luigi games, but they do some very interesting stuff with the 3D. So, outside the regular Dreamworlds, you have, like, one of the bros attacks they introduced us to was the 3D Red Shell, which is a take on the shell that in the previous games, but now you fling the shell at enemies in the distance, and then it will pop back up to the Mario & Luigi brothers.
Did you find the battles to be even more action-heavy than previous Mario & Luigi games?
Not particularly if you talk about outside of the Dreamworlds. I found the... So there are also like these Luigi-specific Luigi Dream attacks which use up these special points. And I found the one with the Katamari ball was pretty much more action-heavy.
Right, well that one, like, was... You actually had to move the 3DS around because it used the gyroscope to navigate this Katamari ball of Luigi's.
Yeah.
picking up even more Luigi's to boost your attack.
I was just smiling at that. I was like... I don't know what... understand what's going on, but I like it, so please continue.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. It's like, I guess Luigi, because it's his dreams, he gets these superpowers or whatever, so he can kind of, like, do all these crazy things and multiply himself many times, and he becomes sort of, like, a special power to Mario, but he's, like, way more powerful than he should be in any normal circumstance.
Yes.
I think it might be interesting. I noticed that in the when you're in the dream world, because of those powers, they can just throw so many enemies at you. Because it's more like there's one or two main enemies, and then there's just like a mob of minions. And because like now with a normal jump attack in the dream world with Luigi, Mario will jump and hit one guy, and then there'll be like 20 Luigis who jump down and hit everybody else. Yeah, it's going to they're probably going to have a lot more minion characters, I think, who are just fodder for Luigi's awesome attacks, sort of thing.
Yeah, it does mean that you have to be very careful with the timing, though, because otherwise, if that fizzles, then you've got that many more enemies to worry about. If you make, if you don't hit the timings right.
Yeah, that actually happened to me. I had to deal with all those swarm of those little enemies who constantly jumping off of me. But easy enough, they're pretty handy to avoid. They weren't too difficult, actually.
Yeah, I think, now that I think about it, they all attack as a group, so you don't have to wait for a long battle to resolve itself. They sort of charge you in formation, and you can just dodge them all at once.
Yeah, I saw a combination of both. It might have to do with how many you have left on the screen. There's like a few of them attack you, and then the rest of them mob you at once. And so maybe they have some adaptive stuff just to make the battles more interesting.
Hmm. Also, my god, the battle music. Again, I like that music in that game. I like how it looks. I like the presentation feel of it. What did you thought of the bits of story they introduced in the game? Like, knowing the enemy, I think his name is Phantasma or Phantasma?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, dreams have been done a bunch of times, especially like within the Mario world, and so I don't know. It didn't seem very original.
Not particularly, no. I don't know. I liked it, but I want to see more of it. I'm not entirely convinced yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I don't know. Maybe we're just jaded. It's not. I'm less concerned with like the thematics of the dreams. Like the story there was nice. It was interesting. You know. I thought it was neat that you know they made this pun on pillows, and all those little touches of the game. So I'm looking forward to that. But I think it's not so much that it's a dream world for me. It's like, oh, now I jump into this different state where Luigi is super powerful, and I'm running around in like this 2D mini level here. So, you know, I'm still looking forward to it, even if, you know, there's a part of me that's like, oh, dreams, this has been done before.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Mostly I'm still looking forward to it, but there are just the little niggles that kind of bother me at this point in time. But it's just because we haven't seen enough to make, like, a bigger judgment on the whole.
What was
That's
the name
the
of
problem.
The little star character who's
Starlo?
Who's like taking care of Starlo? The tick who hangs around Luigi when he's sleeping?
Yeah.
Because she must really hate Luigi, because Luigi's just there sleeping on the bottom screen, and then she goes like, look at you, sleeping, so lazy, I'm gonna pull your mustache. And she's like, oh, now your nose wants some too, right? And then she like, it's like she just abuses him while he's asleep. I was shocked. It went on. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and then they make that weird joke about her not wearing pants and stuff. It got kind of weird.
Yeah, that's what I actually like about the Mario Luigi series. Just this very absurd kind of humor. Because you save this, like, this pillow character, because these magical pillows that Luigi sleeps on are actually the inhabitants of a race of magical creatures known as pillows. And so that you awaken them from their slumber. That she asks about Mario and Luigi actually wearing clothes. It was kind of ridiculous, but I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, in relation to like the little niggles that you see, like, I mean, it's always hard to demo an RPG, even if it was a fairly long demo, in this sort of setting. So. Yeah, these things are always tricky to judge ahead of time.
Yeah, true. I think that's about it we had to discuss, I believe. Any final impressions looking good for the future on the 3DS?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, these were some very exciting games. So I think the 3DS is really, you know, hitting its stride and a lot of games coming out now that I'm looking forward to.
Definitely. And there's a lot more to look forward to in the very near future. It's going to be a very action-packed summer. For us, it's going to be more action-packed because we're getting it earlier than North America.
Oh.
Which is... Sorry, I had to say that.
Wow. Twist
the knife!
Yeah, we're getting it a full month early. I don't know how we got to that point.
You also said that the name is different.
Yeah, Dream Team Brothers.
Yeah, I have to wonder if they did that just because they assume Europeans won't get the Dream Team reference. I don't know.
I directly get that reference.
I think they should. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's an idea, but I would think they'd get the reference.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like Nintendo of Europe makes some very strange like naming choices occasionally.
Oh, don't remind me of Personal Trainer Rock in the US and Walk With Me with the very long subtitle in Europe.
Actually, you know what? The more I think about it, maybe Dream Team doesn't translate well into other cultures and languages.
Actually, I wonder, so if you guys are getting it earlier, does that mean that you've got a completely separate translation than the US version? I think that happened in previous
years. They usually do that more these days, yeah, because the localization department has improved significantly over the last 2 years.
Mm, so we may end up with a lot of different jokes at some point in time.
We might do, yeah. For it doesn't answer the question why we got then the... an American demo.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe they're still working on it, and NOA's at least for the demo purposes, NOA was ahead on that. I guess maybe that's why it took. You had the week delay. Did they have to ship the DSs over, 3DSs over, or something? I don't know.
I can't wait for those games. I'm gonna play Donkey Kong when I'm going to E3. So that's all I have to say on that one. And Mario and Donkey Kong comes out in 2 weeks, so we should have a review up by the time that hits. Possibly. I don't know. I don't do these things. I just write about
them. All I know is if there's a review going up on Donkey Kong, it won't be me because it'll take me forever to beat that game.
Well, hey, at least we get Donkey Kong before Japan.
Wow. What world do we live in where we get things before Japan? And then Europe gets things before North America.
I think the original one actually didn't come out in Japan for a while because it was an American-made game.
Well, thanks, Carmine.
I don't want a tomato. That was my best impersonation on the spot of, yeah, I'm a little bit humiliated now, but go on.
How about a tomato adventure?
Maybe a princess tomato in Salad Kingdom.
No.
Okay.
No, just no. We're not going to talk about it again. Aaron, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks.
Thank you all so much for listening, and have a good day.
Hello everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. We've got a pretty wild cast today. We've got Tyler Olu.
Hello.
Danny Bivens.
From the future, it's kind of.
And Zach Miller. And we're going to talk, I guess, a little bit of this week's news, some virtual console reaction, both the sad state of it in North America and the wonderful, wonderful state of it in Japan. And yeah, just have an all-around good time. Danny, what time is it in Japan right now?
Oh, it's like 10:30 in the morning, Saturday. So,
not too bad.
No.
It's not bad. I think we've gotten you up way earlier before.
Oh, I think one time I got up at like 6 or something to record.
I think there's been times you've literally been like out of the bar and then just come home and then like started recording.
I'm not surprised. That's probably true.
That sounds like me, the resident alcoholic.
There it is.
Danny's being really weird.
Yes.
She's yelling. So, yeah, a little bit of news this week. I guess, first of all, it came out Wednesday when all the financial stuff came out that Iwata has now become the CEO of Nintendo of America, which I don't know about you guys, but kind of shocking to me because I thought he was more on his way out than, like, getting promotions in other
regions. Yeah, taking on
other
more
regions.
Responsibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what did you guys think reading that?
Now, hold on. Does this mean he's moving out of his position in Japan and just being kicked over to America?
No, he's doing both concurrently.
Oh, jeez. So both regions will suck now.
Well, that's not fair. I mean, we'll talk about Japan's virtual console offerings in a minute here. But, I mean, if anything,
he'll be apologizing twice as much.
Yeah, two different languages. That to me, it kind of makes sense. I mean, lately the Nintendo Directs have featured Iwata himself in America. It's not like Reggie's doing them or someone else. I mean, Iwata does them. I mean, he's the face of the company as much as, like, Miyamoto is or Reggie is here.
Yeah, Reggie was kind of booted to the end of that last one.
Right.
Here, you can go ahead and announce that Zelda game. Enjoy that.
So, like, I think it makes sense in that regard, because, I mean, we see him as much here as, you know, as they probably see him in Japan. He's still very present here to us. And maybe it'll mean, like, somehow we'll get similar content across both regions in, like, a timely fashion. Mm. I don't think that will happen. I mean, we're not going to get, like, games that never came out here type things. But still, like, maybe somehow there'll be a little bit more synergy between Japan and America, and we won't be left in the dark.
I just don't know if there's some sort of weird, like, some barriers or something that was in place before, like, they have to wait for someone else's signature, and he's like, you know what, I'm already here, I'll just sign it on the Nintendo of America letterhead, and we'll be good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm kind of, because, okay, with this news, like, the former CEO of NOA, he was a Japanese guy, I'm looking at the news story, Tatsumi Kimishima is his name, and, I mean, I don't know if he's moved up or moved over in terms of, like, you know, corporate bureaucracy or whatever, but he's now transferring to, you know, the Kyoto office, and he's going to be, like, a managing director. And
yeah.
I don't know. I think I was reading something about what Johnny might have said on Twitter, and it's like, why in the world couldn't Reggie have picked up this title? I mean, you know, I don't know. It kind of goes to a thing where Japanese companies are kind of weird sometimes, and they just don't trust, you know, non-Japanese people to be in positions like this. I mean, it's kind of, you could almost say it's like racist, but I don't know. I mean,
no, yeah. I think you're right. I think there's something to that. I mean, I think that's why Nintendo of America has no power of its own. You know, they still operate by Nintendo's demands and orders.
Scott's like, no, it's racist.
No, I mean, you're right. I totally think so. I think they trust promoting from within Nintendo
totally
in Japan
agree.
Rather than Nintendo of America.
They've always been a Japanese company.
I wonder if Iwata had, like, some sort of weird, like, video conference with Reggie, and he's like, Reggie, I want to bring this snubbing direct to you. Because it's, like, really weird. But with these companies, with Japanese companies in particular, it seems like they don't, it's like, you're never, like, fired. It's just, they just move you around in, like, disgrace. So I don't know if this guy is getting, like, a better position or this is a lower position or something. It's really, really bizarre. But,
well, just based on titles, like, if you go from CEO of Nintendo America to, like, a managing director, I think that sounds like a demotion to me, but...
Yeah. I'm not sure how it works. It's really, really bizarre. Yeah.
Although maybe becoming CEO of Nintendo of America in the first place was a demotion, because I don't know what he did. I mean, we never saw the guy.
Does anyone else feel bad for him? I'm like, here's this guy, this Japanese guy, who, like, 6 years ago, they're like, you need to go to America. And he's like, oh, yes, of course, I'll go. And now, 6 years later, they're like, now you need to go back to Japan. Like, his life's, like, just being uprooted at, like, on the whim of Iwata. It's insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you mentioned, Tyler, about how you know, Japanese companies rarely, like, fire people, and I read this book, and I talked about it on the Famicast a couple of months ago. It's called Japanmanship, and it's really interesting, but it's a weird name, but it talked about, it's particularly focused on, like, the gaming industry, and it talked about how if, like, a company wanted to get rid of somebody, what they did, and they don't do this anymore because it's fucking ridiculous, but they would literally put these people in a room by themselves with, like, none of their things, just, like, a telephone, and just, like, they had to sit in there and answer telephones, like, all day. And, yeah, that's what I read. I mean, it's fucked up. And they basically, the people, they're there for maybe a couple of days and say, fuck this, I'm going to quit. And they're like, oh, you want to quit? Well, we can't fire you, so, you know, no severance or whatever. You know, it's kind of bullshit, and I think a lot of Japanese companies are changing, but, I mean, there's still this weird...
It probably happened to Gunpei Yokoi, right? Like not even to make light of what happened to him or anything like that, but it seems like those are the kind of things that happen. Like, I think he was just moved within the company, and then he just left and worked on, like, the Wonder Swan. So,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. So then, yeah.
No, I'm not going to tell that joke. That was a bad joke.
Okay, it's going to be in bad taste.
It's going to be in bad taste. All right. It's going to be involved. You can make it up on your own. Nintendo doesn't fire anybody, but he got hit by a car.
Oh, God. Okay. All
right. Well, I think that's it mostly for the Iwata news. It'll be interesting to see how this kind of plays out, if there are any sort of positive or negative repercussions as far as, I don't know, streamlining content from Japan to America. But we'll see. Probably not. I'm sure it'll just be more of the same. Anywho, and then I guess yesterday, Thursday, all of a sudden this news started coming out, or I guess it was even late Wednesday night is when it first broke, and then there was some clarification Thursday, that Nintendo said, you know, the C3 stuff, not so interested anymore. I think we'll pass. At least that was the initial impression, is like that they just weren't going to be there at all. And then they clarified Thursday that, they will be there, with like one little private, like, meeting for investors and different businesses and things like that. And then they will have their normal, like, exhibition hall type thing where you can go and, you know, play the games that are there.
Well, I think they're having two conferences, one for the media and one for investors, right?
Right. But even the one for the media
is
closed
door. It's going to be like it was last year, where only a limited number of people are in.
Right, it'll be like the 3DS thing they did.
Yeah.
Except that'll just be that. That's all they're doing.
I think the hands-on thing is like just takes in the exact same time spot of where their conference was.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's the same exact time. Yeah. But I wonder if it'll be broadcast at all. I don't know. Probably,
no, they'll do a Nintendo Direct. They might do several Nintendo Directs. And I mean, really, after last year, where they had, you know, a Nintendo Direct right before the conference, and then they had their big conference, and then they had like two or three little conferences during E3. This is where they were headed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I think this is great for the media and stuff too, because like you said, you know, there's going to be that special thing basically just for media. And it's good because, I mean, you don't have, I mean, cause a lot of people go to E3. Some people that really have no business going to E3 go to E3. And that makes it, I mean, I've never been, but I mean, that makes it really difficult for, you know, the media to cover some stuff. They have to fucking wait, you know, for hours and hours just to play a game or something. So these focused small things are great so that, you know, this information could get out there about, oh, this game plays like this, this plays like this. You can just get out there faster.
Yeah, I agree. And after the debacle that was the Nintendo Land, like, extended preview at the last event, you know, I tweeted that I'm much more in favor of them getting to, like, control and produce something that they'll share online versus trying to do more live E3 things, because, I mean, it just, that was so bad.
Wait,
and,
but, what? Like, we're not showing Retro's game? Oh, shit. Let's get Nintendo Land back up there.
Let's really, really, really explain this Luigi's Mansion game. I mean, it was unbelievable.
We should explain that instead of that the Wii U is not just a Wii controller.
Yeah, a little more time there would have been good. Maybe we should show the system. I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, so I think this would be good, especially considering the Nintendo Directs lately have been so good. Like, if this news had come out 6 months ago even, I think I would have been kind of disappointed. But lately, like, the Nintendo Directs, they've just been dropping, like, bombshells in these. I mean, just game announcements after game announcements. I mean, just stuff you didn't even know. It wasn't even on your radar, you know?
I mean, I feel foolish for not have seen it coming, just because after every single one, we're like, well, what are they saving for E3? Like, this is crazy stuff.
That's,
like,
true, yeah.
What could they possibly have stuffed? And it's, oh, they don't. This is E3. Like, we're going through E3 right now.
It's E3 all year.
And it sounds like hyperbole, but that's what it is. Like, that's what it's been. Like, when we saw X premiered, when we got the Bayonetta 2 news, like, this was them just releasing the stuff that they have. And I like this because they have all the time in the world to do it. They don't have an hour and a half or whatever. And if they want to go super in-depth with a Luigi's Mansion thing, then they can do it. And then that's just a segment of another one, and the next one will be better. It's just, I don't know. I see nothing but good things. And then I think for some reason, like, I wrote about this, but it's like, when E3 was on, like, the cusp of, like, death, like, everyone was like, oh, good riddance, who needs it, it's a bunch of crap, and then it came back, and then people still shit-talked it, and then Nintendo's like, we're not gonna do it, people were like, this is the craziest, dumbest move they've ever made.
Oh, I know,
this
right?
This is so weird. And then all of a sudden, people are concerned about, like, the mainstream, like, I don't understand, like, why people care at all, like, just worry about the games. And that's it. Like, you don't need to worry about what the mainstream press is gonna say, or because realistically, they're. I think, like, this, like the, like we spoke about the event, the miniature event, like the little thing they're doing for, you know, press during E3. That's, maybe it won't be us. Like, maybe you guys won't be going to that. Maybe that's for the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune or whatever. That's for them. And then you guys will be going to the hands-on stuff. And then that way, everyone gets what they want, kind of thing, and they don't need to worry about, you know, blowing. It's just, it's a lot of money. I don't see why they should have to spend that kind of money just to have people be like to give them a C- because they didn't show the Retro game. Like, gives a shit. It's just ridiculous.
Right. It just seems counterintuitive. And honestly, I think both Sony and Microsoft are going to be moving this direction too. I mean, Sony announced the PlayStation 4 a month ago now in their own private event, and now Microsoft's doing the same thing in a few weeks. I mean, this seems like the direction everyone's moving. I mean, why operate in this one singular space where everyone's announcing things and your news is so easily lost when it's so easy now to just host your own thing online and have people watch it, and people will watch it, and major news outlets will cover it. Yeah. I mean, it's not like they announced the PS4 online in you know, the Sony press conference, and then, like, no one knew about it the next day in the mainstream press. I mean, everyone was talking about it. It's just weird. I think we give E3 too much power. I think in this day and age, it's sort of obsolete.
Yeah.
Now I think it's good for game developers who can't host their own, you know, private events and stream them online to millions of people. So I'm all good, like, with game developers going there and announcing things and operating within that space. And, you know, journalists getting to go and play a bunch of things from different companies in one singular space. But for the big three, it just seems obsolete at this point. So, but anyway, let's end up with the news and fun things to talk about. Let's talk about the Virtual Console.
Hey!
Lots of hot things.
So, this week was weird. We were going to record this segment, like, Tuesday or Wednesday this week, because we thought the system update was going to be Monday, and the Virtual Console was going to go live on Tuesday, and then that wasn't the case. I don't know, I guess, why did we assume that would be the case? Because, what, because Nintendo Network was down a little bit on Monday, right? And we just assumed that was going to be when it was going to launch? Or
I think it was the Facebook thing, that Nintendo was like, oh, two more days until Virtual Console, and then it was true. That they were... I still kind of think that they like internally like delayed it, and they're like, just make the Facebook thing the announcement or something, like, just because it was so weird, like, it was like all of a sudden they're just like, oh, we're gonna tell you what you can download on Friday, like, it was so bizarre.
That's a good point. Yeah, the wording definitely changed. It definitely did sound like first like it was the launch, and then all of a sudden it was like one more day till we show you the lineup.
Yeah, it was weird, and it was just like a bunch of photos. It was like the weird, and you had to wait forever. Like, it was at like 5 or 5 o'clock or something when it finally showed up, and it's like, and then disappointment sank in. You
know, leave it to Nintendo to push shit back until the last possible moment of the week. It's just the way they do it.
Yeah, it is brilliant. And then to launch the Virtual Console on not a regular like eShop update day, like, so stupid. I mean, not that everyone like is buying eShop games every week, but you've trained us to this point that things come out on Thursday for the most part, and then all of a sudden you launch the Virtual Console on a Friday.
I was really grateful. I write the downloads, and I was like so worried. I had it prepped and everything about being like the stupid having to link all those games again. Oh.
Yeah,
but I didn't have to. It was the best day.
Yeah, in Japan, I mean, the eShop updates on Wednesdays, and I was like, well, shit, I'm just going to have to update, you know, put a thing in next week and be like, oh, well, this shit came out last week.
Yeah, there you go. So the system update then eventually came out Thursday night.
Yeah.
And downloaded that. Took, I don't know, what about you guys? It took about 2 hours for me to download that.
Well, it took maybe a half hour for me.
I think I got an hour or something.
Oh, wow.
At one point I think when I started, it said 40 minutes, and it has to install.
Way the install, yeah.
Same as Zach, about 30 minutes.
Oh, wow. Huh. I wonder why it took me so long.
I just did it, like, this morning when nobody downloading it.
That's true, yeah. And Zach, you too would have been much later because you were at work till, like, everyone else goes to bed in normal time zones. Seriously, I felt so weird being in Las Vegas a few weeks ago and, like, Twitter just being a ghost at, like, 11 o'clock p.m. Las Vegas time because everyone I follow is, like, 2 hours, you know, ahead, so everyone was just already sleeping at it. I got a preview of what it's like to be you. Like, you just wake up once everything's already done for the day. Everything's been announced. All, like, news is already broken.
All that.
And then you're still up and no one is on Twitter.
That Nintendo Direct, I woke up and it had already happened. Now it's like, this is, okay, I guess I'll read Twitter now.
Exactly.
Well, welcome to my world, Japan.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah.
I always like my mornings. I wake up and Danny's written, like, a ton. Danny and James Charlton are, like, just, my Twitter feed is just full of it. I love it.
Yeah, or, like, I love waking up in the morning and checking my NWR email, and it's all like the Japanese and Australian staff like going out and doing things. It's great. So anywho, the update came out, made things a little faster. You can now like download and install things with your system off, which is actually kind of cool.
So it's so in a way it's always on.
Just like the Wii, right? Wii Connect 24.
Right.
It'd be good. It even has a little orange light when it's downloading and installing things like the Wii would have when it was in standby.
Oh, man.
And then what else? Oh, and then you can adjust the screen resolution now of the Walla Walla Plaza and things, which, Tyler, I know we were talking about beforehand.
it's the secret best feature for me. Like, it was so annoying having things get cut off. I hated it.
I know. This is very nice. But what do you guys think so far? Does it seem like the system's running any faster for you?
Not really.
I think so. I notice it is. I feel like there's like new hangups. Like it'll
like,
do something
like starting programs, right?
Yeah, like when you click a program, it's like it kind of just like hangs for a minute and then it goes. And then sometimes when you come back to it, it'll sit there and like all the windows, like the tiles, will be just blank or like have little like TV kind of weird looking resolutions to them, and it kind of just sits there for a bit and then it comes up. But I think it is faster for me personally. I've seen a lot of people say the same thing where it's kind of slower, but it seemed like they forgot they had stuff downloading in the background, so they're like, oh, that's maybe what it was. But I don't know, I am seeing mixed results.
Yeah, to me it's almost like it's loading the same speed, but now you get to like see the Walla Walla Plaza like sitting there for a minute before things like start to load, rather than just being like one consistent loading screen. It's like it freezes on the Walla Walla Plaza, either loading it or loading the program, and then shows the loading bar and then moves on. So I don't know. Yeah. And I haven't noticed too much difference yet, but
I think Zach put it best. It's still unacceptably slow.
Yeah, it still does feel really slow.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus, it took me about like 20 seconds to load up the eShop. And I was like, seriously? And then I'd let it sit for a couple minutes because I was like writing up a story for the site. And then because it had been sitting for like 5 minutes, it just wouldn't do anything. So I had to fucking reload it. And, you know, it's just stupid.
See, yeah, with the PS3, the OS is always running in the background, whereas with the Wii U, I always feel like when you close out of a program, it's reloading the entire OS.
Right, like it's rebooting almost, yeah. And the Wii was like that too, if I'm not mistaken. The Wii would do that. It didn't, like, run in the background. Yeah, which is really weird. I heard someone on Twitter say, and I haven't experienced it myself yet, but that the disk drive no longer spins, like, when you're... playing games or programs that are installed on the hard drive.
Oh,
I don't know if you guys know that. Like the disk drive would just spin, even if it wasn't reading a disk.
Did not know that.
Yeah, it would be like it was always like humming, but now apparently it doesn't do that anymore, which is good.
I saw mentions that Lego City Undercover loaded faster.
I heard that too. Someone said Injustice loaded a lot faster now, so maybe games load faster too.
I just sold my copy, so I don't even know. I wish I could have tested it.
Well, yeah, especially Lego City, because yeah, that was supposed to be atrocious with loading times.
Mm-hmm. I think there's like an undo function with Miiverse with postings and stuff. And I find a lot that I would be drawing something and my finger would touch the screen and all of a sudden this giant line would jut across the entire Miiverse post and I had to like carefully erase all these very particular. So now you can just undo, so it works out. It helps me out.
Oh, well, that's nice. And, oh yeah, I guess we should mention that too. The PC version of Miiverse went live, mm-hmm. or the browser version, guess. So it's pretty cool. It was actually kind of fun. You go in there, I think I'll actually look at my timeline more because I didn't like to spend like 15 minutes getting to it in the Wii U and waiting for it to all to load. So it's kind of nice just to be able to check it from, you know, your browser and your phone or your computer. And it's easy to share posts, which is cool. If you find any like good pictures of Link you just have to share for some reason. So anyway, the big crux of everything then, today the Virtual Console went live earlier this afternoon, and who has actually used it?
Nope.
Me.
Okay, well, I mean, I guess the 30 cent games, yeah. I mean, it's not like anything changed, really. But, so, in America, let me scroll down to my list of great things we got. Today we have access to Balloon Fight,
yes!
Donkey Kong Jr., Excitebike, F-Zero, Ice Climber, Kirby's Adventure, Punch-Out featuring Mr. Dream, and Super Mario World.
Wait, none of those are good. Except Mario World and Kirby.
Well, some of them are, like, good. I mean, like, Mario World's good, F-Zero is good, Punch-Out's good, Kirby's good, but it's, like, nothing exciting, nothing we haven't had access to
for a long
time. All
of us own those in three or four different ways.
Uh-huh. Right. And, like, I feel like they kind of cheated because they included a handful of these games that were the 30-cent games.
Well, most of the games are the 30-cent games.
Like, half of them are, yeah. And so it's just kind of like, you know, so we got, like, an extra three games now that you can pay, like, $6 to $8 for that really aren't.
And there's, like, the weird fact that we can, like, look
already
forward
play
to
them?
Yoshi in June or something. Like,
yeah.
Who cares? Like, now I'm like, oh, that's going to be a release in June. Like, the big Virtual Console release for 1 week will be Yoshi. Oh, terrific.
Right.
Woo.
Is it Yoshi or Yoshi's Cookie? I think it's Yoshi's Cookie.
No, it's Yoshi.
Oh, crap.
And then, like, same with Kirby Superstar. That's going to be out a little bit later. Yeah. And we know Earthbound's coming, like, at the end of the year, I guess.
I could swear that maybe
December 31st.
Though. In that like scissor reel, I know Mario Brothers is in there, like the arcade game, and then Super
Mario
Brothers
2.
2? Not Super Mario Brothers 1, but 2's there. And I feel like Yoshi's Cookie was there and not just Yoshi, and that's maybe where Zach's getting it from, or I'm just crazy.
No, I'm pretty sure I heard something about Yoshi's Cookie somewhere. Yoshi's Cookie is actually maybe a good game, from what I remember.
I like Yoshi's Cookie. I played it on my Game Boy a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. The music's kind of fun. I actually put a Yoshi's Cookie track in here in the podcast not too long ago, a few episodes ago. Yeah.
Wow.
Go back and find it. a bunch of NES games, two Super Nintendo games, one of which was already available for 30 cents, and that's what we have. I will say, you know, it's nice that now you can use your restore points and you can play entirely on the gamepad. That's great. But yeah, just a surprising lack of games. I mean, I knew they weren't just going to, like,
drop everything that was on the Wii eShop. But just, I mean, just considering how much is available, and I would imagine how easy it is to port these over. I can't believe there isn't more. And I'm just really shocked they didn't just do Earthbound now to just create some really great buzz.
You could
have all these, like, crappy, quote-unquote, games right now and then Earthbound in that list, and all it would be is people just cheering.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you don't like Earthbound, like, Zach, I know you don't really have any interest in Earthbound, but I think if it was there, you would be like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. You would appreciate the fact that they put it there.
Yeah. But if they put Earthbound there, nobody would buy any of their other games.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone's going to buy any of these games. Super Mario World will do fine. But other than that, and the 30-cent games, like, no one's buying Balloon Fight or Donkey Kong Jr. No one. Nope. I challenge you to find someone who isn't on staff and, like, just downloaded it to review it.
Go to Miiverse and find go to the tab where people that own this game only can post. And then find it and try to find someone.
It'll just be Carmine. So, Danny, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what came available in Japan today, then.
Yeah,
and
so...
we'll all hate you.
Yes, don't, please. I told these guys before this, and I think we put this in the Twitter feed for the story that I have up on the site. Don't kill the messenger! I'm not Nintendo, I just live in Japan. Please, you know. But yeah, Japan, they got 10 titles, actually, that came out today, yesterday. And, you know, it's Ice Climber, Excitebike, Spelunker, Zevius, Downtown Nikketsu, Koushinkyoku, Sore Yuke Dai Undoukai. It's a Kunio-kun, like, beat-em-up game, like, kind of like River City Ransom, but not. This is like an unreleased game. This is Famicom game, NES. Then F-Zero, Super Mario World, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, Fire Emblem Seisen no Keifu. I think it's like the fourth Fire Emblem game. And then Mario's Super Picross, also came out too. Before that, I mean, there, you know, four of the four games from the promotion, you know, there's Balloon Fight, Fire Emblem, Monsho no Nazo, it's like the remake of the first one or something on Super Famicom, Earthbound, and then Kirby's Adventure, which is like 30 cents now. And then next week, actually on May 1st, Solomon's Key, Mega Man 3, and Kirby Superstar are coming out, too. So that's kind of awesome. I mean, there's a pretty good list of games available here in Japan. I'm really happy with, you know,
we're so happy for you that you're happy about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we are cheering for you right now.
Yes, I know gamers in, well, not Japan, are like, fuck you. Probably. It's fine. I accept that. But yeah, that's what it is. NES games are 500 yen, $5. Super Famicom games actually range from like 800 to 900 yen. Like, for example, Fire Emblem's like 900. Earthbound is 900 also. And some like Famicom games too can go up to 600 yen, $6. So, yeah.
Well, it's the same here. They actually put that caveat into the pricing for the NES and SNES games here in America too, although none of them are the higher prices yet, but they did say they could range to that, so.
Yeah, I assumed it was just for, like, the import stuff, just like last time, but if Danny's saying they're paying more for their other stuff there, not that Japan is, like, not known for paying more for just regular releases, but
yeah, this is...
I assumed it was just for something else, but it looks like it's going to be for just whatever they choose.
This is pretty consistent with the Wii Virtual Console pricing, too, because, I mean, basically, if you see a game that's 900 yen now, it was 900 yen back on the Wii Virtual Console. Like, these Fire Emblem games, I'm pretty sure they're always, like, $9.
Yeah.
So, just because.
Yeah, there you go. So, having, actually played some of these games now on the Virtual Console, it's pretty much what you'd imagine it to be. I thought maybe there'd be some, like, surprise announcement. I know, like, people were kind of talking throughout the week, like, oh, maybe, like, there'll be some, like, 3DS... linkage or something, or like, yeah, maybe you can download games on 3DS that you've purchased on the Wii U and play them there. But of course, there was no announcement like that. Why would there be? The restore points, save states and whatnot are a nice feature. And I think they come in handy.
I wish they were restore points, though, like on the 3DS.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, on 3DS, you can just...
Like,
right before a bad jump or a tricky jump, you make a restore point. And then,
yeah, it's the same thing.
They have that there. You just got to touch the gamepad screen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. It pulls it up. Yeah, you can remap the controls.
Oh, I thought it was. I thought it was like the Wii. Oh, good.
No, no. It's like, yeah. You can. It's like the Wii in that you can't have those suspend points, but you can still create a restore point.
Nice.
Yeah, you create one.
What I like too is that the game runs in. I'm not really too familiar with this. What is it, 4:8 or the aspect ratio, like the original aspect
ratio?
Yeah,
4:3.
I like that because it takes me forever to set my TV up and my Wii U to be able to go in Wii mode and play Super Nintendo games and whatever in that aspect ratio and not have
without
it stretch
stretching
it. But on the Wii U Virtual Console, like, just naturally is. Like, it'll just show up at that natural, nice aspect ratio. So I really appreciate that.
It does
and
look
with
nice.
Button remapping, I'm going to really look forward to it with Super Metroid because there's some control things with Super Metroid that bug me. Like, is it switching missiles or is it like
pressing
select
to get to everything?
Yeah.
So I'll tinker around with that. I think with Punch Out, I put the punches to ZL and ZR. I like that a lot.
Oh, yeah. That would make sense. Yeah, so that's cool. I mean, there's a lot of customization. I had some weird quirks today with Super Mario World. Like, I was playing a two-player game with Tabby, and I believe on the SNES version, if you have just one controller, you just pass it back and forth. So I tried to do that on the Wii U version, and it wasn't working. We couldn't both play with the gamepad. So then I grabbed my, my Pro Controller, and I powered it up. But because the gamepad doesn't take up a, like, slot of your four controllers you can have connected, when I turned on the gamepad, it automatically connected to slot one, which also wouldn't control the second player. And so then I had to go into the Wii U menu to reassign it to the second slot. But unlike the PS3, where you can just tell it to be whatever controller you want, you have to have a controller connected into the first slot before you can add something to the second slot. So I had to grab a Wii remote, activate it, have it take the first slot, and then turn on the Pro Controller, and then it took the second slot. That was great.
Genius.
Yeah, really intuitive there. But we finally got it working and, had a good time. I will say I'm not loving playing Super Nintendo games on the D-pad and the buttons of the Pro Controller or the gamepad.
Really?
It feels kind of weird to me. I don't know. Like, I didn't really notice it in F-Zero and stuff, but playing Mario World, having played it a million times on an actual SNES controller, like, it just felt kind of stiff, like a little unresponsive.
Huh.
I don't know. Yeah. But, I mean, I still have my classic controllers that I thought actually worked really well for playing games like that. So I might just use those connected to a Wii remote. But we'll see. So, yeah. But no one else has really dabbled too much with the actual playing of the Virtual Console games yet.
Well, I played the first World of Kirby. I mean, that game's still amazing no matter what you play on it or what
it's
you're
really
playing it
game.
On.
I'm excited for Superstar to come out because that's the best Kirby game in my opinion.
Mm.
I played that a lot, but I'm excited. I will definitely buy that.
Yeah, I'll buy that too. I don't have it on the Wii Virtual Console, do I?
Oh,
so I guess I'll be paying the whole amount.
Yeah, the $8. Yeah.
Yeah. I have the collector's Kirby thing, so that's my first experience.
Oh yeah.
Playing.
You know, I keep meaning to buy that. And it's always $40. I'm like, someday this will drop. And it hasn't yet. You know, they're still selling Metroid Other M for $50, so I don't think the Kirby collection will ever drop.
I don't know. What were you going to say, though, Tyler?
Oh, just that I've been dabbling in it with the 30-cent stuff and then Super Mario World. But I think it's telling, like, how disinterested I am in this current lineup, because I think a lot of people are like, I know JP was, but they're like, oh, I just have to pay a dollar. Like, all these games that show up as, like, a dollar, just, like, the upgrade fee. Mine are, like, all full price. Like, even on the Wii, I didn't even bother playing any of those. Like, I don't know. I probably played them in, like, Animal Crossing and when they came out on the NES. Like,
yep.
I was an NES kid, so I played those games, and, like, I don't really feel the need to get back into them. So, and I just picked up the 30-cent stuff. Like, why not? 30 cents. Whatever.
I know for me, most of my Virtual Console stuff on the Wii is on my North American Wii. And I have, like, probably 50 games. But, like, on my Japanese Wii, I only have, like, maybe 5 games. And, one of them is, like, one of the 30-cent Fire Emblem games. I mean, yeah, first world problems, huh? But, yeah, so it kind of sucks. You know, if I want to rebuy all that stuff, I'll have to literally rebuy it for the full price. But, like I was telling these guys before we started recording, like, even though that I have, all of the 30-cent games, including, like, Earthbound and a Fire Emblem, and I still don't even think I've even played them So it's kind of ridiculous.
You're a monster. I'm going to just title this episode, episode number whatever, we all hate Danny.
That's fine.
Danny,
yeah.
I got to tell you guys real quick. I've been filling out surveys for, you know, for Nintendo, Club Nintendo.
Oh, yeah.
And it asked me where I first heard about Mega Man 3. And I clicked other and wrote Nintendo Power in 1993.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I want to do that and put like, yeah, my friend Jimmy in the third grade was telling me in recess.
I think a lot of people can stop putting Bring Earthbound to North America in that category. Now that it's coming, they can stop bugging Club Nintendo about it.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty wild. Now we just need Mother 3 over here. The possibly superior game. I don't know.
Is it, though?
It's Mother 3 is really good. Earthbound is great, and I think it's quirky and it's funny, and I really love it. But Mother 3's got, like, kind of depressing. It's got, like, some serious shit in it. I mean, you play as these two kids, and I mean, you're... I mean, oh, spoilers for Mother 3, I guess, but it's, like, in the first chapter. But, like, your mom dies. Like, your dad goes out to try to, like, rescue her and fails, and your mom dies. And then he's, like, he's left raising the two of you.
That's nice.
And trying to take care of you and stuff. And I mean, that's like within the first chapter. And like the dad freaks out. Like he starts attacking like his friends and the other villagers in the town. Like when he finds out and like, it's so dark, but it's so good.
Weren't like the old promos, like just people playing it. And then they'd say words about how they felt as they played it. And they'd be like, I think the big one was heartrending. They're like heartrending. I think there was even like, I feel there's footage of like someone, like a woman playing it. And like she would sob, like she was like a tear ran down her face, and that is really, it is a sad game. It's a sad game.
It is. I mean, not throughout. Like I feel like it's not sad throughout the rest. Although the ending's pretty crazy, but like just that first opening chapter with the mom and everything, it is really wild. But yeah, good game. But that'll never come, or it will. But it'll be the launch virtual console title for Wii U 2.
yep.
In 6 years.
I feel so, like there should still be some. Like precaution. I don't know if I'm misremembering, but I could have swore that there was something like when Iwata was first talking about the virtual console for the Wii, that he was like, or they said this would be this will be something that we could bring Earthbound to America. I could have swore they said something like as a hypothetical. They're like, now we can bring it over, and it just never happened. And I'm like, okay, we don't have it on our Wii U yet. Don't get too excited. Like we were told things before.
That's true. Yeah, you never know till it's actually there. So yeah, I guess that's about it. We'll just see what keeps coming out. I'm a little surprised that there's really, at least in America, no third-party, virtual console support whatsoever. I know, Danny, in Japan, you guys got a few things it looks like Super Ghouls and Ghosts, and then the Kunio game. I mean, that's not a Nintendo first party, right? That's a third party.
Yeah, third
game.
Party. And then, yeah.
And then, you guys are getting Mega Man. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah,
nothing here yet.
Oh, wait, you guys... Oh, you're getting Mega Man on don't you already have it on 3DS? Or
Yeah. I think they got all the way up to, like, 4 or something on 3DS.
Yeah, well, they're on 4 now. They just came out with that yesterday.
Okay. I know in Japan they came out with that a long time ago.
Of course.
So, yeah, we'll see. I guess overall right now we're all, like, cool that virtual console's there. Wish there were games we wanted to play, except for Danny, who has games he can play but doesn't. So we'll see. A lot of cool functionality. I'm excited to see what comes out next. How many games they're releasing each week, I think we'll be telling. I mean, the Wii started off great with the virtual console. I mean, we're getting, like, 3 or 4 games every week, and then it just completely dried out. So we'll see what happens, but... Yeah, I guess that'll do it. Anyone else have anything they want to add?
I think they really got to blow out the doors with this, because the Wii launched with, like, 64 and Super Nintendo. Like, it had all the systems, and this is just, like, NES and Super Nintendo. And they're kind of like, well, we're working on N64. Like, it's going to come, and Game Boy Advance. And it's, why is it not ready now? So they have to really release some really great stuff.
Why are we getting Game Boy Advance on the Wii U?
And not, yeah. But see, this kind of feeds into the theory that, oh, like, there'll be, you know, like, cross-system play or something, or you know, buy it on one and you can play it on your other with your 3DS and your
Wii
U.
That would blow my mind if that actually happened. That would be the most progressive thing they've done in, like, 2 decades.
Yeah, it'd be exciting. We'll see. I mean, they've obviously released the same games now on the Wii U shop as well as the 3DS. So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe it's in the cards. Who knows? I want some Game Gear games to come to the Wii U, because I feel like playing on the gamepad is like playing an actual Game Gear. About the same size, I think. And the battery lasts about as long.
Yeah, that's true.
Boom!
Take that, Sega, 20 years later.
And Nintendo right now.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, thanks, guys, for coming on and, I guess, doing a lot of trash talking and talking a lot of news. This has been fun.
Really the best kind of podcast.
That's all we can do. So, yeah, if you, the listener, have thoughts about the Virtual Console, the Iwata stuff, the E3 stuff, whatever else, you can email us at connectivity@nintendoblereport.com. I was about to say nintendoblereport@nintendoblereport.com. I don't know that would do.
You can try that.
Yeah, might do something. Probably not. Or you could just leave some comments in the TalkBack thread, and we will look at those and respond to you. So thanks, Tyler, Danny, and Zach for being here.
Yep, could I make a small plug really quick?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Okay, well, a new episode of the Famicast is going to be coming out probably shortly after you're able to get this, so, yeah, be on the lookout for that.
There you go. It will be everyone just cheering the Virtual Console. It'll be very different than this segment.
Pretty much.
We're going to be so happy. Nintendo's the best.
Can I make a plug?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, a new episode of Frozen North Dinnercast is coming out tonight, I promise.
Which is Friday, but so it will already be out by the time you're listening to this.
Right.
So find yes, it. In where the can future. They find that? Where can they find that, Zach?
At crosstalkwithaw.com.
And iTunes, I imagine.
Okay,
thank you.
I'll make a plug for NintendoWorldReport.com. Really great stuff there. Not just Radio Free Nintendo, the whole website, a whole bunch of stuff.
Beautiful. All right, thanks, guys. And, yeah, we'll talk to you guys later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And that will do it for episode 83 of Connectivity. As always, you can send us listener mail to connectivity@intelligiblereport.com. If you get a chance to rate and review us on iTunes, that would be awesome. Follow all of us on Twitter. Go to NintendoWorldReport.com, look for the Twitter sidebar on the right side of the page, and you'll find all of our usernames there. And be sure to stick around now for a bonus segment all about Doctor Who.
People whose ancestors devoted themselves, sacrificed themselves to you. Can you hear them singing? Oh, you like to think you're a god. You're not a god. You're just a parasite eaten out of jealousy and envy and longing for the lives of others. You feed on them, on the memory of love and loss and birth and death and joy and sorrow. So, come on then, take mine. Take my memories. But I hope you've got a big appetite. Because I have lived a long life, and I have seen a few things.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. It's been a while since we've done one of these, all about Doctor Who. Today I'm with Patrick Barnett.
Hello, everyone.
And Amanda Albert.
Hello.
Who you may remember from the last time we talked Doctor Who after the Christmas special. And who is here with more crackpot theories about who Oswin is.
The master.
There you go. But we'll get to that in a minute. So we've gotten through, I guess, half of the second half season. So we're 3/4 through season 7, I guess, if you want to call it. There have been four
episodes. Hey, series 7B.
7B, right. Right, my bad.
I've seen it 7.2 also. I haven't seen 7B yet.
Oh, I've seen it, yeah. I've seen it, like, every which way. What a mess. Oh, well. So yeah, we're four episodes in, which means there are, what, are there four left then? Are there eight
four.
In this half season? Is that right?
Yeah.
So we thought, well, let's just talk about each episode so far, what we've thought, anything that we've learned, which I actually don't think we've learned that much, much to my surprise. But we'll talk about that, I guess, after we kind of go over each episode. So right out the gate, we had the Bells of St. John, where we meet Osmond once again, or Clara, or whatever, you know, she has a few different names, I guess. Clara is, I guess, what we're...
Clara Oswald?
Yeah, is, what I guess, her official name. And, yeah, I kind of expected her to die again in this episode. I thought that was going to be a recurring thing for a while. Did you guys think that, or were you just, like, off the bat thinking... this is going to be the one that doesn't die, that's going to stick around.
Right after the Christmas episode, that was the theory I was kind of telling everyone. I was like, I think they're just going to kill her off every single episode in the 7.2 season.
Yeah. Which,
I mean, I didn't really think that, but it's nice to kind of...
make things up.
Yeah. It's
oh, it's so fun to make things up. It's like conspiracy theories.
It's the type of thing where it seems implausible, but it's Doctor Who, so it just might be plausible.
Yeah, the one bullshit thing you say as a joke will end up being what it really is.
Right, absolutely. But I could totally see that working. I mean, if each episode he's in a new place trying to solve a new mystery while trying to keep her alive so he could just figure out who she is, and in the end she keeps dying, and he just gets like more and more, not just aggravated, but also interested and more intrigued, and it keeps him going and finding her in all these different times. Like, that could totally work.
I think it would have gotten bad where they have to keep kind of doing an exposition and introducing her to the Doctor, where that would get old after a while.
That's true. And eventually it would just turn into, like, South Park, where you're like, okay, how's she going to die this time?
like they did with Rory?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, we had the Spoonheads, who were these weird, I guess, aliens or maybe robots. It really wasn't 100%. Well, no, I guess they were robots.
Yeah, they were more robots.
Did anyone else think of that song, Spoon Man, the whole time?
Oh, yeah. But who does that?
Soundgarden.
Soundgarden, that's right. Boomer. Yeah, totally. I didn't at the time, but now I get it.
It was stuck in my head the whole day.
And yeah, these robots, they came through the Wi-Fi and sucked out your soul, basically, I guess, or your whole being, and stuck you on a computer somewhere. That was pretty much that. What was the point of that? Do you guys remember?
Great intelligence. They're collecting information.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Which is, that's really interesting after the Snowman episode where it was the great intelligence in that one as well.
That's true, yeah.
I think that's going to be the baddie leading all the way up.
Yeah. I wonder if you can, like, I'd have to go back and watch them now. I haven't really watched the past few episodes thinking of the great intelligence, but I wonder if there's, like, hinting that maybe they're behind some of these things.
I think so. I went back after the Christmas special and watched the Patrick Troughton episodes that involved the great intelligence, and... even though it's a different actor now, it's, what's his name, Withnall, doing the voice for it. The voice is really similar to the old one. And you kind of, like, you know, you hear it for a bit in the Christmas special with that giant snow globe.
Right.
And then you hear it in the Bells of St. John.
Yeah.
But I keep listening for it in the other episodes, like, to see if he's going to say some other giveaway information to let us know that it's him.
Yeah.
I would think that, you know... If we're not going to see him in the 50th, we'll see him in the finale, I would think, for this season.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, that seems right. You're right. I mean, that's like what they're building up to.
I think it's fitting where the finale, I think it's the name of the Doctor. I think that's the name of it, which is kind of information and the great intelligence information. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fitting.
Yeah. An answer to the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's certainly
a theory. I think that was just kind of revealed today that was the name of the last episode of the season. At least I read it today. I don't know if it came out today or not. But yeah, so that's pretty exciting. Yeah, and then the Doctor gets a new jacket. That's fun. It's got this like festive purple kind of longer jacket. That's always... costume changes are always a big deal.
We actually get to see more of the TARDIS, like, formally, I guess. There was that short introduction in The Snowmen, but I feel like we saw more of it in this one.
We're going to see a lot of it this weekend.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, I'm excited about that. So yeah, overall, a pretty good introduction to this version of Clara, who is apparently going to not die, at least not right now, and,
she's already dead.
Maybe. That's another theory.
She's a ghost!
And then we got a little bit of sort of her family background too. We get much more of it, I think, in the next episode. But you know, she's an orphan, it seems. And then the one interesting thing too is he's looking through her book, and every age is marked except one. It skips like, I don't know, age 23 maybe.
That might be it.
It's somewhere in the early 20s.
Wasn't it 21 or something?
It's something like that. Somewhere in the early 20s. But yeah, every year of her life is marked off, but then one year is just skipped. Which I'm surprised they didn't, like, highlight more or, like, hasn't come up again yet. But obviously, I think that's got to be something. Or it's just a red herring. She just forgot that year. Who knows?
A couple things in this episode. I'm not sure if you caught on to them, but do you remember the kids that she's kind of watching at the beginning? They were reading a book. Did you notice that the author of that book was Amy?
I didn't notice it at the time, but then I read that online later. Oh, okay. Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah, and there was something about she said that chapter 11 of the book was the greatest. It would really like make you cry or something like that, but happy tears, which is kind of just 11th Doctor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's actually pretty good.
And the two guys on it look like Sherlock and John.
Really? Oh man, Sam and I gotta go back. I knew after this recording this, I was gonna end up going back and watching these episodes again.
I think you can buy that book online. Like, actually, BBC published it, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, there better be some clues in there. I'll read that shit.
Yeah, you read a minute and then report back to us.
I hope I'm not making stuff up. I think you can buy it.
I'll let you know if you are. I'll send you a very strongly worded email.
So then the next week was the Rings of, Akatan? And yeah, I thought this was... I think visually this was a really great episode.
Yeah. I mean, there were some cheesy effects occasionally.
Anything like on the hover bike as they were going from the one planet to like the little like moon or temple or whatever.
The moment like the island kind of picked up the girl in the bubble and just kind of dragged her away. That was really subpar in my opinion.
Yeah. No, that's true. The effects weren't great, but I guess like the overall like set.
The whole world.
The costumes were wonderful though. The costumes for the aliens.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And just the variety of aliens. I mean, there was just so many, like, new things I hadn't really ever seen before.
Yeah, I remember them saying they'd never had that many unique, different alien costumes all on the set at once.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Well, I believe it. I mean, I can't think of many times where they have that many different species of aliens. I guess maybe in, like, the second episode of the reboot when he's with Rose and they go to, like, the end of the Earth world. Or whatever. Yeah.
Even that's not terribly many, I think. There's like maybe 7 or 8 different kinds.
Right.
A lot of blue people.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The face of Bo, which is always good. But this episode, I felt like, I don't know, it didn't really do anything for me either way. It was kind of like setting up a little bit more of like Clara's background, but like overall the threat didn't really, I didn't feel threatened, I guess.
I was just going to say, when watching this episode, it just very strongly reminded me of The Beast Below, which was Amy's second episode.
That's what I was going to say. You're right.
It was just very similar storytelling, where they kind of go to a faraway place, and it just followed the same storyline, where they get separated, the companion does something themselves, they come back together, Doctor gets themselves in trouble, and then the companion saves everyone.
Right, the doctor sort of fails, and the companion ends up saving them. Yeah,
it's a formula to try and forge some kind of relationship or chemistry between the doctor and the companion,
and like show the worth of the companion. You know that they aren't like helpless.
That's show you why he picked them.
Right, absolutely. As if the fact that she's died 2 times and is still alive wasn't enough,
or she's that also... she's just really attractive.
Yeah, because there's that too, which she is.
My favorite part of that, though, was Matt Smith in that audience of aliens with her, just looking like an old man in church, pretending to sing along with the hymns like he knew them. That was great.
That was pretty good.
That was just the best part for me, because it was barely acting. It was just more of him imitating, like, his grandfather at some point.
Yeah, I thought it was, like, up until the end parts, I thought it was just a fun episode, too. Like, I think Matt Smith did have a lot of fun with it. And...
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, they just look to be having a good time. And you could see the relationship just building between them, how they get along and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and then, yeah, and then, you know, anytime you get a good, like, doctor speech about how old he is and, like, you know, how much he's seen and everything, you know, that's always good. I'm always into that. I'm a sucker for that.
Oh, the Matt Smith speeches are always wonderful. Like, yeah. he could recite the phone book for me, but if he did it like that, I'd be crying by the end of it.
With, like, dramatic doctor music in the background. Yep. Absolutely.
If you play some Murray Gold and have Matt Smith shed a few tears, I'll listen to it.
Wave his arms around and stuff and just look kind of frantic, yeah.
Yep. I did think, though, I had this thought, and you guys tell me if this is far-reaching or not. When he's, like, telling his story and it seems like it's feeding off of him, it almost seems like that thing that he's talking to is the great intelligence. Like how it's trying to pull information, it's pulling stories. Instead of, you know, souls getting stuck in the Wi-Fi, it seems like the recurring theme with the great intelligence is it's always trying to pull energy or stories or skills or traits.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. Like I said, I didn't know how many more links there were to that, but that could easily come back later and, you know, it turns out that that's somehow involved with the greater intelligence. Yeah, that's good.
Okay, good.
Look at you. Plus 1 point.
Better than Clara and the Master.
Yeah. Actually, that might take away your point. Sorry.
Well, I'm never serious about that. The only time I was serious about it with Rory, but now I'm just going to say it every season.
Someone's got to be the Master.
Every season, someone's the Master. Mike was joking with me today. He was like, my new theory is that the Doctor is the Master.
That's pretty good. And then in the end, she gives away her... Did she give away her... Yeah, she gives away just the leaf.
Just the leaf. It wasn't just the whole leaf.
Book, she keeps the book. Yeah, she gives away the leaf.
That's okay, right. I have one more dumb thing about the leaf.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Has it been a while for you since you've seen A Good Man Goes to War?
No. I love that episode.
Not terribly
me
long.
Too. Good Man Goes to War. Do you remember the random girl that had met the Doctor sometime before?
Yes. Yeah.
It's very unspecific. And she has the prayer leaf that she sews herself with River's name.
Yeah.
It was just interesting to me that Clara had the leaf, and then this girl has a prayer leaf. And I'm not necessarily saying it's the same person, but I wonder, because the planet, was it called Akatan?
Yes.
Has some significance, and it seems like there's a lot of religion throughout the universe tied to this place. I wonder if somehow that influences what this prayer leaf has come to be.
I could see that. Yeah, that's actually really interesting.
Sounds crazy enough. It just might work.
Right. Yeah. I want to go back and watch that episode now. But yeah, that would totally make sense. I mean, why not? It's like the origin. Yeah, I mean, this leaf saved them. So
maybe it's like, you know, a story that gets handed down.
Right. Yeah, totally. I'd buy that. All right. Okay, 2 points.
Okay.
You're killing it.
All right.
And so from there, we moved to this, like, great, like, sweeping new, like, planet with all these species to being stuck in a submarine. Not that it was bad. I actually liked this episode a lot. But now we are into the, Cold War, and the Doctor winds up on a sinking submarine, a Russian submarine, nonetheless, and the TARDIS quickly runs away, leaving them stranded in the submarine. What was his explanation for that?
He reset the HADS system.
Okay, which is
hostile action displacement system.
Right, where like the TARDIS protects itself if something's happening.
Yeah,
basically.
If something hostile happens, it relocates.
Yeah, which it figured a submarine filling with water was hostile enough and ran away.
Which Patrick Troughton did too.
Oh, okay. That's happened before.
Yeah, they keep pulling. I know every episode it seems like they make some reference to something he said this season, at least.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, because at first it just seemed kind of like, well, what? It seems like a weird... Every time they're, like, stuck somewhere, there's always some weird reason they have to make up why he can't just get to the TARDIS.
It's still a weird bullshit plot hole, but because this show has gone on for 50 years, they can just pull a plot hole out of their ass from so long ago that it seems like there's continuity.
Right. Yeah. But that's fine. I'm good with it.
Yeah, me too. I'll totally buy that cheap trick.
And then so we had the, what do they call him, like the Ice Warrior?
Ice Warrior.
Ice Warrior, this crazy huge alien in this robotic suit. And, you know, the Doctor's talking about how he's never seen one outside of a suit, and then it leaves its suit, and we never actually see it.
Well, you do at the end.
Do you see the whole thing, or just,
oh, just
kind of
mostly
face?
His face? Yeah,
you see its face, and then you see its hands, mostly.
Which are really gross. It needs a manicure real bad.
It was just great. Like, it just reminded me like of a really like low budget horror movie. I mean, every time it attacked someone, its hands just came out from the ceiling and just grabbed people's faces.
That's what I love about Mark Gatiss, though. Is I think he's a lot of fun as a writer, but every episode he does kind of has a B horror movie vibe to it.
What else? What other episodes has he done?
He did. He's done a few. He did. In series one, he did. What's the one with Charles Dickens and the ghosts?
I don't know what it's called, but I know what you mean. The writer of the Doctor's Wife episode from last season?
No, that was Neil Gaiman.
Special guest.
I get those two mixed up.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. For Doctor Who, he wrote. I'm going to look this up.
Neil Gaiman did another episode this season, didn't he?
Oh, he did The Unquiet Dead, Idiot's Lantern, Victory of the Daleks, Night Terrors, Cold War, and Crimson Horror, which is coming up later this season.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Night Terrors was the one with the creepy dolls when they got sucked into the dollhouse.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, similar kind of thing. Yeah, I don't remember the effects looking too great in that, but... this was just another fun episode, like another good just sort of relationship building between the two of them, another like example of how, you know, Clara can take care of herself. I like the references to like Duran Duran and everything. That Russian scientist was really great.
Oh, I loved him. Wasn't he fun?
Yeah, he was.
I want him to be back. I wish he could be a recurring character.
Well, he lived, right? Yeah, he lived, so maybe, but probably not.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
They don't bring characters back often like that, but sometimes, so it's possible.
I think one of the really interesting parts was when the doctor, he told Claire to stay right where she was, and she was just like, okay. And the doctor's just like 1 second reaction to that was perfect.
Yeah, because he's taken aback by that.
Yeah, it's like the first time that's happened. I can't think of any situation where the companion literally did exactly what he said.
Right, they always tail along or don't stay put or something. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and his reaction was perfect. That was good. Yeah, but kind of similar to the last one, the threat really never bothered me. And, you know, maybe I missed something. How did Clara know, like, anything about that guy's daughter? Do we know that? Did I miss something?
He talked about him early on. He talked about them singing the old songs.
Okay. I must have just missed that. Because I was like, how did she know that? But yeah, but then again, same thing, you know, that was her intervening and sort of saving them instead of the doctor who was ready just to pretty much kill everyone to save the world. Which it seems like he's been ready to do a lot lately.
Have you felt that this season, at least this like second half of the season with Clara, all the enemies and evil guys are kind of not as evil and deadly as they have been in the past?
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Yeah, like the Spoonheads were just simply storing people. This guy was just trying to get out from where he lived or where he was stuck.
And right. Then,
I guess the planet was trying to be evil, but all he was really doing was he was just hungry. He needed some food.
Yeah, and they had something worked out where it would have satiated him, but then, you know, it just, there was agents working against that. So, yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I've talked about it before. Like, I almost wish every episode didn't have to have this, like, villain that just ended up being resolved easily and didn't really have much impact. Like, I wish there would be episodes of Doctor Who that were just, like, strictly character building, you know? Like, I think of shows like Lost, where there are episodes that, like, it's not like every episode had the smoke monster or had the others or, you know, something bad going on. Like, there could be episodes that were entirely just about developing characters.
Well, they've done that in the past. The Amy episode where she kind of, like, got stuck in that one time.
The girl who waited.
Yeah, but even still that, there was that threat of her, like, dying, you know? And it wasn't as apparent a threat as, like, an alien coming to kill them. But still, like, that's fair. That's a pretty good example. But, like, other than that, I feel like every episode always has to have some kind of bad guy.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. That was the one thing I could think of where it didn't follow that formula.
A lot of times the bad guy just ends up being sort of, like, a detriment because the bad guy's not, like, fully, like, realized and it's just resolved so quickly, like, in the last 5 minutes that it just, there's no, like, I don't know, it never felt dangerous or foreboding in any way.
Like, there hasn't been a good Dalek episode where they're like holding someone hostage and gonna kill someone or something like that. Like even the last Dalek episode, it was just a case of they went and collected the doctor just so they could so the doctor could help them with something.
Right. And I feel like there hasn't been a good episode where people are actually, like, dying and, like, there's a sense of drama. Like, I think of the, like, Library of Silence.
Yeah. Where they get picked off like flies.
Right, and, like, people are actually dying, and, like, you feel, like, the sense that, like, this is something bad that the doctor actually has to, like, work through. And there hasn't really been an episode like that at all this season, I don't think.
I think the tone of the show has really shifted after David Tennant left, because I think David Tennant was kind of better at that dealing with the death than maybe Matt Smith is.
Yeah, maybe. What do you think, Amanda?
I don't know. I think it's got to be a harmonious marriage between both things. I think when you get the right writer and it's the right point in the show and the right chemistry between the actors, the conflict with the monster or the baddie or the, whatever the threat is, that pushes forward the character development.
Right. I mean, the best examples it does, yeah.
Yeah, like the girl who waited or the doctor's wife. There is an obvious threat in it, but it's pushing forward an already existing conflict between the characters. And because of the threat, they're able to sort out the conflict.
Right.
Like, it kind of jump starts the conversation that the doctor probably was hesitant to have, you know?
Right.
Because he's certainly not going to sort anything out or address anything. No. But if they're in a bad situation and he's forced to, then he's going to sort it out.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because it's kind of like shows that in Asylum of the Daleks, you know? He's not going to sort out Amy and Rory by talking about their relationship, but if he takes them on an adventure where they have to depend on one another, then they'll sort it out.
Right, and they did, yeah.
So, yeah. It's a precarious balance, and you got to get the right writer for that. But I feel like I know we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but I feel like Hyde did that pretty well.
Well, yeah, and we can move to Hyde now, and I agree with you. I actually enjoyed this episode quite a bit. I think it's my favorite of the four so far.
Yeah. I love, one more thing about Cold War, Hungry Like the Wolf.
Yeah.
Are we,
Oh, yeah, there you go. There's Pine and Rose.
Are we considering that a reference or not?
No. In fact, you just lost your 2 points. I'm sorry, but someone had to do it.
I can't help it. It's too funny to not bring it up, okay?
And I just feel like it was deliberate just to...
Oh, it's just Stephen Moffat fucking with people.
Absolutely.
Which I love.
Any song.
Yeah, I love that about him. That he's like, oh, let me screw with all the Rose shippers.
Right. So good. So in Hyde, we have a ghost story, which I actually thought was, or at least a ghost story for most of it, until we find out it's not ghosts at all. But,
is it ever ghosts? Is it ever really ghosts?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess not, because there was the one with the Cybermen, which of course turned out not to be ghosts.
It was ghosts in the Charles Dickens one with the Ninth
Doctor. Nope, what? Aliens stuck in the void.
Oh, okay. Well, they were close enough to ghosts.
We did have actual, like, kind of witches, though, in the one of the early episodes with
That Martha. That was Shakespeare, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Shakespeare one, yeah. With a lot of Harry Potter references, which I love. So, yeah, so they go to this, like, big haunted mansion where this, retired soldier and now scientist is with his medium, his empath, I guess. And they're trying to figure out what's going on with this ghost in this house. And the doctor is happy to help. And yeah, I thought this did a really good, like, at least for the first half, was really good at actually sort of being like a scary movie. I mean, it did a lot of good, like, kind of bumps and, like, you know, sudden, like, jump scares and all that kind of stuff.
They walk through a dark hallway and you just see something along the ground kind of lurking.
Yeah, which was awesome. Yeah. Or they showed the shot of the that scientist and the girl, like, looking out a window and, like, lightning flashes. And then you see the monster, like, sitting next to them also, like, out the window just for a split second. That stuff was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it turns out the ghost is a fellow time traveler who's, like, stuck in this imploding universe that's only going to, like...
A pocket universe.
A pocket universe, yes, that's closing in on itself. And so she only has so long to live. And the doctor decides to go rescue her. And then, oh, lo and behold, it turns out the monsters that were chasing her and that are in the mansion are just weird-looking aliens who are in love and just want to be together and make babies.
More horrible-looking babies.
Yes. Those, they were pretty creepy, too. They did get a job of, like, making them kind of move like the girl in the ring moved. Like, kind of, like, very, like, sporadic and just sort of, like, shaky.
Thought they
moved pretty well.
I think that's... because of their body structure, because when they actually showed it, it was very odd. Like, it only
the way that they did the filming too, they filmed it. I watched the behind the scenes thing for it. It was something about the way that they moved. They made him move backwards, like from the way that he normally would, and then when they played it back, they played it in reverse.
Yeah, which is done a lot, like in kind of B-horror movies.
And Twin Peaks.
And Twin Peaks, there you go.
when you watched the behind the scenes, was it actually someone in a costume?
Yeah, it was. Oh, okay. And he just was cool. Down on all fours, and he would contort in a very strange way.
That's pretty awesome.
I didn't know if it was kind of like a doll that they had.
It's a guy in a whole costume. It wasn't cool. Like where with the dinosaurs on a spaceship where it's half of a dinosaur for some scenes. It was the whole thing was a guy in a costume. Which I love that they're doing more practical effects. I feel like that's going to stand the test of time more.
Yeah, I think so. Because sometimes when they do all CG, things just do not look good.
Oh, yeah. If you watch some of those, you know, 2005, 2006, you feel embarrassed for them.
Those are the worst. Those really are.
Oh, it's so bad. It looks like a Windows 95 screensaver. It's not good.
There are some really bad things in there. And then... I thought this episode for sure was when we were going to get, like, some tidbit into Clara and, like, what her deal is a little bit, like, with the empath and everything, but we don't. She's just kind of like, yeah, she's just a normal girl. Like, what do you mean?
She's a normal girl who the TARDIS hates.
Yeah, which is great. I love that kind of building relationship between them. You get that a little bit in the second episode. She kind of says to the one girl who ends up being the sacrifice, no, I don't think it likes me. And then you get more of that in this episode. Although the TARDIS does eventually let her in, so I wonder if...
Do you think there's a reason?
That the TARDIS doesn't like her? I feel like it. Yeah, I feel like it'll...
Here's the time to interject my crackpot theory.
Yes, here we go.
This isn't my theory. I read this online somewhere else, but it's pretty
plausible.
Did you
read it on Tumblr?
It wasn't Tumblr. It was a review for the on AV Club. It was one of their things. They said that Clara is another TARDIS. That's why she pops up all over time. She's another TARDIS whose chameleon circuit's broken, and she's stuck in the Clara form.
Oh, wow.
What?
That's a pretty wild... And then there you go, and it's actually the Master's TARDIS.
They compare...
So it ties them both
together.
They actually, their theory was it was Classic Who, so I'm not really up on Classic Who. It was some girl's TARDIS.
The Ronnie?
Yes, that's who it was, they said.
She's a rival Time Lord.
Yeah, her TARDIS. That's who they said it was. And I don't really know anything about that, but they don't own the
rights to that character, so there's no way they could license it.
Mm-hmm. But see, that would be interesting, like, if that's how this season ended with a rival Time Lord, and then at the 50th anniversary you have Matt Smith and David Tennant working together to bring down this rival Time Lord.
Bring down Clara.
Yeah.
Who is a TARDIS.
Well, I heard the rumors that supposedly she's something like a fixed point in time, and that's why the TARDIS doesn't know how to deal with her or process her, much like the way she didn't like Captain Jack Harkness.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. It's got to be something like that, or like a paradox or something that, it just isn't agreeing.
I just can't decide what's a red herring and what's not.
Yeah, there's a lot to go off of. And I'm excited for this next episode because it's all going to be inside the TARDIS, which I think is interesting.
I hope it's more than just hallways like they did in The Doctor's Wife, where that was just strictly when they were wandering around. It was just all hallways.
Well, Stephen Moffat complained about an episode of Classic Who when he was a kid that showed just corridors, and that really infuriated him as a child. And so the fellow that he had write this episode, you know, he said, let's not make it corridors. So it better freaking not. I'll be furious.
Yeah. I think it'll be rooms and stuff. I mean, I think they've hinted that this TARDIS has a lot of other things in it. So I think that's going to definitely be the case there. But I'm excited. And, you know, Clara getting separated, and now either this will develop some relationship between her and the TARDIS, or show a little bit of more, you know, maybe why they don't like each other.
Have you seen any of the images for the episode?
I watched, like, the little trailer that was at the end of the last episode, but I haven't looked at, like, actual, like, official pictures from the episode, no. Is there something in there?
Yeah, there's this great photo of the Doctor looking at these white lights hanging from the ceiling. And they have Gallifreyan written on them. And supposedly, those are going to be future console rooms. there's like an area of the TARDIS where it has these little white lights. They almost look like eggs with Gallifreyan, and that's all future consoles.
Oh, weird. They like grow into the room.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
I love the thought of it being like part organic and part machine. That's so interesting to me.
Which makes sense, the way it's all, like, it restructures itself, and, I mean, obviously it has a mind of its own.
But it's like this symbiotic relationship with the Doctor. It's so neat.
Yeah. What were you saying, Patrick?
I was wondering, do you think they're going to explain in this episode why the TARDIS has changed its look in between the two halves of this season?
Maybe. I mean, that's
becoming
Didn't
they kind of already, because the Doctor's changed so much?
Is that why?
I would think so.
Did he say that? That, like, he changed it just because...
I think it's kind of inferred.
You think so? Just because of what he went through with Amy and Rory, he just needed to change it just to different scenery, forget about them, maybe?
I don't necessarily think forget about them, but I mean, the way that I inferred it is that when that happened, he kind of changed his whole demeanor. Like, he was going to close himself off. And, you know, the previous TARDIS was kind of warm and homey like a hobbit hole, and this one's kind of cold and like a doctor's office a little bit.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But I love this one so much more.
I love
like
it.
I feel like it's gotten more inviting as the season's gone along. But there definitely that Christmas episode, when he first walks into it, it definitely looks just sterile and yeah, definitely just lonely.
I think I was telling you, Scott, I feel like the new TARDIS is built around a moving camera inside the...
Yeah.
Like, inside the console room itself. I feel like they can move the camera around a lot more than just having stationary shots.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, the old TARDIS, like, it just felt like they could only do so many shots, like, from like, a few select angles. But it does feel like a big, like, space now that they can do a lot of different things in.
I think it's because they have that, like, center area, and then just the space on the outside is just kind of empty. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
So you can kind of move the camera around it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've done a lot of cool shots that they haven't done before now. Like, in that Christmas special, you know, that was the first time when Clara's opening the door and you're going in and you're following the whole way through. They hadn't done something like that before, and I think with this new layout, they're able to maneuver a lot more easily.
Yeah.
It's more straightforward where you, like, just open the door and it is a straight path right to the center console. Like,
yeah, it feels seamless.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm excited for this episode, though. I expect a lot of jokes about rooms he doesn't remember, rooms he's never seen since it's been redesigned. And
I hope there is, like, people inside the TARDIS that he has locked up somewhere.
Well, it kind of, the little trailer made it look like that.
I think that's where I'm getting that idea from.
Yeah, it made it, yeah, you're just stealing what they actually did.
I couldn't remember why.
Here's my idea that I totally didn't see anywhere officially at the end of the last episode.
I credited AV Club for the last one.
But yeah, it definitely looks like they stumble upon something in the TARDIS. Like, it looks like he has prisoners or something, unless something's just, like, been stowed on the TARDIS that he didn't know about. But it looked like it was something he had put there.
How great is that part in the trailer where he's yelling at Clara, asking her what she is, if she's a trap?
Oh, yeah, that's gonna be good. Although, but that could easily misdirection. That could just be, like, she's like, is this a trap? And he's like, are you a trap? And then it's just like a throwaway quip, and then that's it.
Yeah, it's just misleading as the Mad Men trailers.
Yeah, exactly.
God, I hate those.
So, yeah, that's it for so far. I don't know, do you guys think we'll get anything about Clara before the finale, or do you think it'll just all come out at the finale?
Well,
I think those last two episodes, like the end of the Cybermen episode, which mm-hmm. is the second to last, and then that last one.
I agree. Yeah, and Matt Smith said he knows now who she is, so we have to know at least by the end of it.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you guys think they're actually going to reveal the Doctor's name at the end of the season?
Oh, fuck no. They're not going to do that.
It's like it's just going to be some Stephen Moffat trick.
Yeah, of course.
Can I tell you something stupid that I read on the internet about the Doctor's name?
I would have it no other way.
I read on the internets that supposedly... in the name of the Doctor, we're going to see the fields of Trenzalore, and that this is where the Doctor's grave is.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I've heard that this might...
Did you too?
Yeah, I've heard that he would... I've heard that he would die this episode, is what people are saying too.
But he's not going to, because there's the 50th anniversary.
Oh, good point. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, I didn't even think
about
that.
And he signed on for 2014.
Did he now? Mm-hmm. Cool.
Oh, so I didn't even hear that. Okay, so cool.
The last I had heard was... rumored to, like, regenerate maybe at the end of the 50th anniversary.
But, yeah, but I had heard that, that maybe that episode would go there. So that's exciting. We'll see what happens with that, and maybe...
I'm excited that Alex Kingston is in it. I wonder what the Rivers Song tie-in is going to be.
Well, yeah. I read somewhere that the previous title before they named it the name of the doctor, it was going to be called The Funeral of Rivers Song.
Yes, so... I read that too! Yes! I was hesitant to say anything for fear of you guys being like, what?
She's just making this stuff up. Well,
yeah.
But she didn't want to lose more points, Scott.
But we, yeah, exactly. Negative one. But we know that would just be, like, misleading because we know where she dies. I mean, we've seen her die.
Oh, yeah, anyway.
The first episode she appeared, she died. So. Yeah.
Well, how do we know that time isn't rewritten? How do we know Clara isn't River?
You're right. Maybe she regenerated.
Yep. Or maybe Clara's the doctor.
Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be great.
Mike's theory is because he saw Clara as a child with a sweater that had two hearts on it that she's the 12th doctor.
I would love a female doctor. I think that would be cool.
I would be totally okay with this actress playing the 12th doctor. I'd be hesitant for an unknown.
With anyone else.
But I like this actress. She's very good.
Yeah, I could see it.
She's funny.
I feel like they wouldn't do that, though, because of the backlash they may get.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think they'd be very fearful of ruining
they have a huge female viewership
years.
Because of the eye candy. They're not going to get rid of it.
That's true, yeah. And the diehards just probably wouldn't be into it, and then it'd be something weird where they just have her on for a season and then kill her. And it would just
it'd end up being Community's Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly. Like the American version?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's so good.
I have a recurring joke that there is a parallel universe where Doctor Who is an American-owned property, but it's called Professor Whom, and I like to make up who would play the American Doctor, and it's always just the worst choices. So.
That's been rumored to, like, happen before, right? Like, wasn't there even talk about, like, a Doctor Who movie, like, recently, like, but being made, like, in America and with none of the British cast or anything?
There was a rumor about it that Disney was interested in it, but Stephen Moffat pretty quickly squashed that and said, if there's ever a Doctor Who movie, it will be with our staff involved, not some overseas staff. And he's always been adamant that the people that work on Doctor Who should be fans of Doctor Who, not people looking to make money off of it.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. We don't have to worry about that then.
So, do you guys like the season so far? Is it?
I think it's... better than everything else I've seen so far.
I would have to agree. I really enjoy it. The writing, the writing and acting is pretty spot on. I feel like they figured out the right balance of comedy and getting afraid and, you know.
I don't know if I'm there yet because I just feel like, overall, I feel like the episodes are strong, but there were just some really, really great episodes in season 6.
Mm-hmm.
And just the whole mystery of, like, the doctor dying and the silence and, you know, and you've got, like, A Good Man Goes to War and all these things. There were just some really incredible episodes.
I think they were great episodes. Like, there was those few episodes in season 6 that were great, but these four so far with Clara have all been so strong.
I
can only expect that it's going to continue that same pattern,
yeah.
And I can't see it doing any wrong at this point.
Yeah, and we still haven't seen the Neil Gaiman episode. I mean...
Yeah, and that's going to be good. Yeah, that's the Cybermen one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling the things that we liked from the 6th episode, or from Series 6, like the silence, I bet you that's all going to tie into the stuff with the Great Intelligence.
You would think so,
They all seem to have a lot in common with their prerogatives against the Doctor. Like the silence and the question that'll be asked and the Great Intelligence is trying to pull information. It could all tie up pretty nicely if they wanted it to.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that will do it for now. I guess we'll be back in 4 weeks after we see the series finale and we're all freaking out.
So excited.
Clara's the master or a ghost or a TARDIS or the next doctor.
I really like the theory of her being a TARDIS. That's a lot of fun.
I think so too. Yeah, I think that is fun actually. That'd be great.
Oh, I would love it.
So, yeah, well, thank you, Patrick and Amanda, for being here.
Thank you.
You out there, if you have any crackpot Doctor Who theories, feel free to post them in the TalkBack thread. And, yeah, we'll talk in a few weeks' time.
See ya.
All right, bye.